Hi, this is Doug Podell. Thanks for listening to WRIF Online. Don't forget, while you're online, to check out the Riff Concert page. It's the Motor City's best for complete rock concert information. For more details, just click on the Riff banner on your Windows Media Player. Hi, this is Doug Podell. Thanks for listening to WRIF Online. Don't forget, while you're online, to check out the Riff Concert page. It's the Motor City's best for complete rock concert information. For more details, just click on the Riff banner on your Windows Media Player.
Folks, adjustable rate mortgages were the best option over the last few years, but with the change in the market, your adjustable rate will be adjusting up. Call Rock Financial right now at 800-333-ROCK and talk to a mortgage expert about your best options with this change in the market. Interest rates are expected to go up again on adjustables, and it's time to move to a fixed. Whether you're on a six-month LIBOR loan, a one-year adjustable, a three-year adjustable, take a look at disarming and going to a fixed rate. Now is the time. Call a mortgage expert while fixed rates are lower than where your adjustable will adjust to. Right now at 800-333-ROCK. We're a Quicken Loans company, equal housing lender. We'll get you more information soon, but call now, 800-333-ROCK.
Welcome to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Another Sunday night in the Motor City. We're broadcasting into the WRIF listening area, primarily around Detroit, Southern Ontario, Northern Ohio, but via the Internet, all across the country, all across the world. You may be listening to the iPod version of this all, the archived version, the repeat on the Internet. And if you want to find out all the listening details, you can go to peterwerby.com, PETERWERBE.com. Well, the elections were last Tuesday, and the wheels are just coming off the wagon of the Republican Party, the conservatives, the politicians. They're doing and saying the damnedest things, aren't they? And they're going down the tubes. They're circling the drain, as the old cliche goes. And somehow I thought when this finally happened, when we finally all figured it out as a nation, that these people that should be on the margins of society are right in the mainstream and running everything, that when we finally caught on, that I would have this great joy. And instead, it's just sort of depressing, isn't it? I don't know why. I know a lot of you are happier than I am. I'm certainly happy that people, the majority of us, have finally caught on. I mean, great numbers of us, millions, tens of millions, knew right from the beginning that these people that claim they were for family values and, I don't know what, peace, justice, traditional values, all this stuff was just a load of crap, and that they were just out for fleecing us all out of our hard-earned money, and a lot of them are just pure, simple nutcases that that are always around, but you're always kind of hoping that they don't get anywhere near the levers of power. And now, of course, they're installed there. I don't know what we do. And how about us, the American people, the vast majority of us who have to every day get up and deal with America? Well, how about this? I was sharing this with our producer and phone screener, Jay Hudson, who's also the co-host of Motor City Riffs, the fine program featuring Detroit music that precedes this program. They did. There was this poll by this group called the International Republican Institute. It's a conservative group. They say they promote democracy, but they're always a little suspicious, at least in my boat. But that's what they say they do. And they did this poll in Iraq, and it showed that they were very disturbed. They were very disturbed. I don't know why they would think they would get numbers anywhere near this. In fact, I would doubt this, but this is their figures. They said only 47% of Iraqis surveyed in early October said the country was moving in the right direction. And given that there is an invasion, this ongoing war that is taking a tremendous toll among the Iraqi people in deaths and injuries and destruction, there's all these assaults on cities where cities just wind up being emptied and then destroyed almost, that you would even get 47% of the people that would say the country's moving in the right direction. In fact, I would look very seriously at other polls. But anyways, they were very disturbed. Only 47% expressed confidence that the nation of Iraq was moving in the right direction. Now, how about us? How about us living in the United States of America? Well, a new poll by NBC and the Wall Street Journal found that just 26% of Americans believe that the country is, quote, headed in the right direction. 74% of us are worried. We don't know what the hell's going on. We just see bumbling errors, corruption, lies. Fill in the blanks for me, please. And remember, I'm always saying like a third of the country. I mean, I have to apologize to some people. A third of the country is always kind of hardcore fascistic. Well, it's now dropped down to it's even below that. Misunderestimating people or something like that. All right, this is a talk show. My name is Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, and you get on the air real easy, 313-298-WRIF. If you'd like to email me some short observations, please, and I'll try to read at least a few of them. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Well, there was an election, of course, across the country. The Republicans did pretty badly. Everyone said Bush was dragging people down. Rick Santorum, talk about pieces of work. This nutcase running for re-election and for U.S. Senator in Pennsylvania, he stayed away from a Bush event. Now, Bush and Cheney, the only place they ever speak anymore virtually is in front of military audiences. What does that say? But I was so happy with the outcome of the Detroit elections, weren't you? I was just pleased beyond belief. What a great outcome. Man, a person of this quality, now in public service, right? Of course, I'm talking about Martha Reeves being elected to the city council. Martha Reeves? Who the hell? Wait a minute. Come on. Now, I don't expect all of you non-Detroiters listening to know who Martha Reeves is. You might. Come on. Motown. Martha the Vandellas, dancing in the streets. Yeah, that's right. Martha Reeves not going to serve on the Detroit city council. And she's very progressive, very anti-war. She has sung at anti-war rallies in the Detroit area. And so we can talk more about elections and all of that as we go along. A number of things are going on that are extremely heartening. The number one book bestseller on the New York Times bestseller list, Al Franken's The Truth with Jokes. His brand new book, you may remember that his last one, what was it called? I thought I wrote it down here. I did. Oh, yeah. Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them. That was another big seller for Al Franken. And now the brand new one, The Truth with Jokes. Also, this George Clooney film called Good Night and Good Luck that the right wing is just going crazy over. It's a lie. They're smearing a wonderful American. Who's the wonderful Americans getting smeared in here? Senator Joseph McCarthy, another one of these wackos that rose to national prominence where in a country that doesn't go insane every once in a while would have, again, just be kept on the margins. Well, interestingly, though, because this is always about politics and politicians, we're all, and understandably, and these people have us by the throat. They have us by the cojones. And we're just starting now to get aware. So after we're aware, after 74% of us say this country is not headed in the right direction, now we got to figure out how do we push it in the right direction? How do we shove it in the right direction? And so that's going to take some doing. Sometimes these things come up real quickly because either a person or a group or an organization or a movement says, here's what I think we should do, or this is what we think we should do, and everybody goes, what a good idea. It's happened a lot of times in American history. Sometimes it took enormous struggle. If you think about the civil rights movement or the union movement, women's suffrage, or the anti-slavery movement, a lot of casualties along the way to changing America. But we've got to begin. We figured it out now. We know these guys are a bunch of lying bozos. Bozos who lie, or however you want to structure it. One thing that's happening is extraordinarily interesting, and it is away from just centering on the political figures, and that is our money, our lives, what happens to what we do as workers and as consumers. And this film that I mentioned last Sunday, it's called Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price. Walmart, the high cost of low price. The Premier Week is starting today, and it's the largest grassroots mobilization in movie history. There's going to be 7,000 plus screenings of this movie, including, I just put in my, you can go to this site, it's called WalmartMovie.com, WalmartMovie.com, and you put in your zip code, and it tells you all these places where this video is being shown for free. And it shows you the nature of modern marketing, what corporations do, how they treat their employees, and I mean, it's shocking beyond belief. And the idea that we get these low prices, well, yeah, but the cost of it all is pretty high to human beings, pretty high to us, a lot more than we think. You know, it's like gasoline. We always think, used to be like $1.30 a gallon. What is it now? We don't even talk about it anymore. It's down to $2.13 a gallon. So, oh, yeah, that's cool. Remember, that's what I said was going to happen. They're going to jack it way up, and then they're going to kind of come off it a little, and we go, all right, we got it down to $2.13. Let me just go on. I can see I'm going to start getting off in the wrong direction. So, yeah, there was 30 screenings of Walmart, the high cost of low price. And let's see, Steve writes in, he must be from New York, writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I saw the Walmart movie today at a screening in New York City. It was well attended, and there was a great discussion at the end of the movie. I found it interesting that a guy at the discussion stood up and confessed he was a conservative and then proceeded to bash Walmart about disrupting capitalism and ended by saying, no matter what side you're on, as long as you hate Walmart, that's all that mattered to him. Oh, and the movie was very well done, and I enjoyed it. Good luck with the show tonight. So this film has two aspects. One, it's a learning process, because we'll go there and we'll we either have no idea about Walmart or we have some ideas, and even some of us who have a great number of ideas. You know, somebody did a lot of work to do the research on this and to present it to us. But the other important aspect is that it means that people are coming together in 7,000-plus locations around the United States to get together to watch this. This is off the what's the phrase? Ooh, I'm forgetting it. Off agenda or something? Yeah, it's sort of off agenda. The official agenda, of course, is set by the power elite, and this isn't. The power elite wants to have eventually, and Walmart's on the way to this, to have one big corporation called International General, one corporation that will end the, having so many little companies all across the world. So anyways, I'm going to go to this. You can go tomorrow night. In fact, some of you may have already, I think there were showings tonight. Yeah, there was. And then it's all the way through Saturday. And actually each, I don't think I have that here. Oh yeah. Each day of Premier Week, a moral approach on Sunday, Shareholders Day tomorrow, Legislative Day Tuesday, and on like that. Sick Day on Thursday, Working for Walmart. It goes on like that. By the way, that we always say, I said I was going to go off on some tangent. I got to level with you. I forgot the tangent about the gasoline. When we say, oh, we're only paying $1.35 a gallon, or we're paying $2.13 a gallon now, that never takes into account the cost of making sure that the oil continues to flow to the United States. So the reason we're in Iraq is for oil. And the reason that we give billions of dollars to these lousy dictatorships and oppressive governments in the Middle East is to ensure that. So we think we're paying a few years ago, $1.35, now $2.13. We could probably put a lot more on that if we understood what portion of our wages are taken in taxes and not used for us, not used for our families and our communities and our state and our country, but are used to ensure that ExxonMobil and Texaco and the rest of them can continue to pump oil out of the Middle East. You know what I'm saying? This all goes for war. This all goes for foreign aid to Egypt or something like that. So there is a big tax on us that we don't even realize that pumps up the price of gasoline and also pumps up, and this is partly what the movie is about, pumps up the cost of what we buy at Walmart if you go there. I've never even been in one. Let's see, 90% of Walmart stores have been subsidized by tax abatements, up to like $1 billion. And so, okay, let me see, what else? I thought, I said I did, the film Good Night and Good Luck, the George Clooney film about Edward R. Murrow, who was this pioneering. He kind of set the tone for all these things like 2020 and what have you. And he took on this Senator Joseph R. McCarthy, who was this certifiable nutcase who pumped out nothing but lies and took advantage of this anti-communist hysteria of the late 40s and early 50s, as did Richard Nixon, and lied and lied and lied and lied, and finally he got exposed. And one of the people that did it so well was Edward R. Murrow. And that's what the film is about, George Clooney. So I haven't seen him. I'm going to try again to go tomorrow night. Oh, why do I say it like that? Because my wife and I, last night, Saturday night, we hopped out to the Maple Theater in West Bloomfield, and there was a traffic jam there like I've never seen. I've never seen so many people at that theater ever. I mean, there was other, and it was sold out, totally sold out. Couldn't get it. I was also Pride and Prejudice and The Squid and the Whale, which were also sold out. Very, very disappointing. Anyway, one of the things I was thinking, one of the things that made me extraordinarily sad was what's happened to this country because of the lies and the incompetence of Bushko, and how what we've done to ourselves because of this, how much we've been fighting among ourselves. And there was this article that was in the Waterville Morning Sentinel. Waterville's a town I've even been in Maine. Remember Bush came to power? I mean, well, he was placed in there by the Supreme Court. The majority of people in 2000 said, uh-oh, to this guy. I mean, we saw through him then. And that he said he was a uniter. That's what he said. I'm a uniter. He's going to bring people together. And some people, I don't know how many people bought it on the basis of that, but a number of people did. Well, get this story from the Waterville Morning Sentinel in Maine. Five arrested while trying to remove peace group's cemetery flag display on Veterans Day Eve. Police arrested five men on charges of criminal trespass Thursday as a full-fledged squabble erupted over the way different groups choose to remember the war dead. Coming on the eve of a holiday more commonly associated with parades and quiet remembrance, the arrests were made at 6 p.m., made at a 6 p.m. showdown at Veterans Memorial Park when protesters, a mixture of veterans and non-veterans, delivered on their threat to rip up 2,000 white flags placed there to commemorate America's war dead in Iraq. Now, in this article, the protesters are the anti-war people put the flags there. I don't know how to characterize these people. Police Chief, Waterville Police Chief John Morris, a Vietnam veteran, said, "I'm saddened that it has come to this, but I have a responsibility to maintain public safety. Veterans don't behave like that. These people don't have a right to destroy other people's property." So these VFW guys wanted to rip up all these flags that these other veterans had put in there to commemorate the war dead. He says, legitimate veterans organizations don't commit civil disobedience. Veterans died to allow freedom to exist, whether we like the message or not. On October 30th, the peace group Waterville Area Bridges for Peace and Justice placed the white flags at the park, accompanied by signs protesting the Iraq War. On Wednesday, with Veterans Day looming, some veterans called the display a desecration and a disgrace, threatened to forcibly remove the flags and challenge the police permit that authorized the display. On Thursday evening, about eight people, Bridges for Peace members and their sympathizers, among them some veterans, gathered at one side of the park, not far from where about 10 protesters were preparing to yank the flags. And this goes on and on and on. So because of Bush's lies, because of Bush's incompetence, or if you don't think they're lies, because of his incompetence, we're at each other's throats. And remember we were just commemorating 2,000 dead? What is it up to now? 2,065? How many Iraqis have died in the meantime? How many people have just made a vow to themselves that they are going to kill Americans? Like this woman whose suicide belt didn't go off, who was from Fallujah, that was destroyed by an American invasion that put this city to the torch. I don't know. Where are we going, folks? I guess 74% of us say we do not know, right? Now, according to, let me see, who's the spokesman here? Stephen Hadley, National Security Advisor. Imagine this. Now they actually admit We were wrong about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. Now they're moving along, aren't they? We were wrong, says the spokesman for President Bush's National Security Council. But he rejected assertions that the president manipulated intelligence and misled the American people. It was an honest mistake. Turns out we were wrong, Hadley told the late edition on CNN. But I think the point that needs to be emphasized, allegations now that the president somehow manipulated intelligence, somehow misled the American people, are flat wrong. And this gets back to what we were talking about, impeachment. What, in those words, misfeasance or malfeasance? Misfeasance means you screwed up. Malfeasance means you did something purposely wrong, knowing it was wrong. So the question is it misfeasance or malfeasance? I know some of you think around September 11, 2001, that was malfeasance. That somehow the Bush Co. was implicated directly. I think they allowed it to happen. They knew something was coming. They don't know. I don't think they knew anything that big was going to occur on September 11th. Some of you think that. But that would be malfeasance. But let's, oh, I don't know why I should, but let's give them the benefit of the doubt. It wasn't malfeasance. That they just totally screwed up. Bush was on vacation. He didn't pay any attention to the intelligence that was coming in and presented directly to him by his lawyer, Harriet Myers, by Condoleezza Rice, and they said something's going to happen. He did absolutely nothing. That's misfeasance. Why is he still in office after allowing a catastrophe of that magnitude to occur to our country? And let's say here, I think that Bush did manipulate the intelligence. In fact, I think it was a purposeful lie. But, hey, I'm partisan. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. He says, he being Stephen Hadley, the National Security Advisor spokesman, says we were wrong. Turns out we were wrong. We were wrong. That's what he says. So it's essentially support our oops, right? Support our oops. We screwed up. And we got some new rationalizations, and we don't want to lose a war, and, you know, might have to kill a few thousand more Americans and kill thousands of more Iraqis. But support our oops. I mean, that's essentially what it is. And in terms of everybody that suffered, just sorry about that. Sorry to all the families that have lost soldiers from the United States. Sorry about all the families that now have to deal with grievously wounded returning veterans. Turns out we were wrong, though, Hadley told Late Edition on CNN. Sorry to all the families of the dead Iraqis, all the wounded dead Iraqis. Sorry that this country is on the verge of civil war. Sorry that people are so desperate that they commit hideous, unjustifiable acts and blowing themselves up. Sorry about that. Turns out we were wrong, Hadley told Late Edition on CNN. Support our oops, don't you think? Well, I'm Peter Werbe. 313-298-WRIF. If I can work all my little buttons here, I'm going to get some of you on the air, some open lines for you. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Tim from Detroit. Tim, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello. I wanted to talk about something that's not really well known in the U.S., and I've been able to confirm this from three sources that I'm satisfied are pretty reliable. During the Battle for Fallujah in November, the U.S. actually used a type of chemical weapon known as white phosphorus. Now, according to the U.S. military, white phosphorus is actually used as a tracer device that is supposed to illuminate the enemy.
Okay.
But according to the chemical convention signed by the U.S. and other parties in 1980, it's actually classified as a chemical weapon. Now, there actually came out in Italy last Tuesday a documentary on a 24-hour news channel. And it's called Fallujah, the Hidden Massacre. And what this documentary showed was that the U.S. consciously actually used white phosphorus both against militants and civilians purposefully, not as tracers, but actually to, you know, pretty much kill and maim all the people that were under this white phosphorus attack. And there's some interesting some scenes in this documentary, to put it mildly. I mean, you know, showings of people that are destroyed, and the sense of their flesh being hanging out of their bodies and so on. And
well, their flesh is actually I've read I declined to actually watch it, but
very,
reading
very
it,
grisly stuff.
Their skin actually melted. Yeah, that was this goes back to the Vietnam era. We had to destroy the city in order to save it. This is in that we, what did I just, the quote, yeah, it turns out we were wrong, but we're still going to destroy Fallujah. And at the same time, create this whole new group of people that are willing to do the kind of things like that woman confessed to today on television.
Well, you know, the documentary was interesting, too. Supposedly, in the documentary, there was this U.S. soldier there. He's retired from the military now. He claims he was actually there. And one of the code words for using white phosphorus was called Whiskey Pete. And according to this soldier, this U.S. soldier, he pretty much this was actually standard policy to use this stuff as a chemical weapon itself, that it wasn't as a matter of illumination, but it was actually conscious destruction.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to answer for, and everything from torture to withholding food and destroying infrastructures of cities. This is a pretty tough way for Bush to liberate people, isn't it? On the people that are being liberated. And we probably haven't seen the end of it either. All right, Tim, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Where are we here? Let's go to David in Detroit. David, hi. It's Peter Werbe. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Yeah, back to the topic of the Tuesday elections.
Sure.
Yeah, I want to extend my congratulations to the rational majority in Dover, Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah, wasn't that something? Go ahead, remind us about it.
They handed a major defeat to the monkey-brained creationists.
They did. Let me just read this. So I think it'll be easiest if I just did this. All 8 members up for re-election to the Pennsylvania School Board that had been sued for introducing the teaching of intelligent design as an alternative to evolution in biology class were swept out of office yesterday by a slate of challengers who campaigned against the intelligent design policy, including the chairwoman and, everybody. And they were plaintiffs in this federal lawsuit. Claiming that they had free speech was being denied. So these people were just thrown out of office, and hooray for them.
Yeah, and it reveals that that intelligent design debate is is, in my opinion, going to be the gay marriage issue of 2008. I think the mega churches are going to rally around that issue, and particularly in important swing states, including Michigan, that will bring out the voters, and that will be a strategy that the Republicans will be using.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't think it has that kind of power.
Well, it does have enough power to make Senator John McCain cave in on the issue, like a broken POW, which demonstrates to me his recognition that his greatest political threat is Newt Gingrich.
Huh.
Now, my opinion is the person to be most wary of in the 2008 election will be Newt Gingrich.
Well, you know, I haven't used this analogy in a long time, but if you not that history repeats itself directly, but if you think. If you think about the history of Rome, went from a republic to an empire, but at least they had a Caesar. We're going right to Nero and Caligula.
Can't agree with you more than that.
All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you calling. Some open lines for you at 313-298-WRIF. And again, these people that ought to be on the far margins of society. So here were these incumbents that just got absolutely, uniformly, completely booted out of this town, Dover, Pennsylvania. I mean, the majority of residents there were just saying, you know, we're the laughing stock of the country. So all 8 members of the intelligent design people that supported that, kicked out. So the nutcases, the right-wing nutcases, who increasingly... And you can see in their language, the violence in their language. Pat Robertson, isn't he threatening somebody like almost every other day? It was he, wasn't it? That threatened the elected president of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez. So here, Religious broadcaster Pat Robertson warned residents of a rural Pennsylvania town Thursday that disaster may strike there because they, quote, voted God out of your city by ousting school board members who favored teaching intelligent design. And also over the edge, always over the edge, Bill O'Reilly. Why? I can't understand why people like him. I mean, what an obnoxious character. And he just, everything about him, I don't want to go into that, but I mean, everything he's ever said about himself and all that, just lies. But he, you know, is telling Al Qaeda that they ought to strike Coit Tower, C-O-I-T, Coit Tower in San Francisco because the residents of San Francisco voted to, what was the thing about military recruiting? They said that they should discourage military recruiters in that city or something like that. Maine voters turned back a bid to rescind the state's gay rights law. That's great. Voters in Maine rejected an effort to repeal the state's gay rights law, making Maine the last New England state to legally protect homosexuals from discrimination. Of course, in Texas, they put it into their constitution, that they can't marry. And I've always thought that's strange. I mean, like Michigan now has that embedded in our Constitution. It's really a disgrace. And it's the kind of thing. I don't know if any of you are going to remember a Sunday night in November in 2005 in 5 years or 25 years or 50 years or something like that. I mean, I know that some of you say you're 13 years old. Well, in 50 years, you're going to be 63. But all this crap that these right wingers have have enshrined as law, discriminatory laws, it's all going to be gone. And it's going to be like looking back on segregation. And I remember when we first started talking about this, it would be like saying only white Christian men and women can marry, like Jews can't marry or blacks can't marry. Or something. I mean, if it's said in the Michigan Constitution the way it now says in the Texas Constitution, only Gentiles may marry. So it would mean that Jews or I don't know who else, I guess that would just leave Jewish people. They couldn't marry. You know, sort of like a Nazi-like law. I mean, you'd be horrified. If it was the people of Texas just voted that Jews cannot marry or blacks cannot marry, something like that. And so essentially that's what it amounts to. People are voting their prejudices. They allow this bizarre, at best, intolerance and worst, hatred, to direct their fingers to cancel out the official recognition of love. Man, isn't that sick?
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
At most business schools, the teachers get their experience in the classroom. But at Walsh College, the teachers get their experience in the boardroom. So you'll learn the real world of business from successful business leaders, which means you'll have the technological expertise and business savvy you need to get the job you've always wanted. That's what makes your Walsh MBA so valuable and why literally hundreds of companies recruit at Walsh College every year. To find out how you can fit a Walsh business degree into your life, call us or visit our website, Walsh College, the power to succeed.
Call 1-800-WALSH-01 or visit their website at walshcollege.edu. For express admission, Walsh offers walk-in Wednesdays. Visit their Novi, Clinton Township, or Troy campuses any Wednesday from 8:30 a.m. to 7 p.m.
The party just doesn't stop at Leopard's Lounge and Broil, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. There's always something happening at Leopard's Lounge. Every Monday is amateur night. Come watch the hottest amateurs around as they compete for cash prizes. Wednesdays, check out the Leopard's Lounge girls as they strut their stuff to the best live music out there. And every Thursday night, make sure you stop in for free pizza. And of course, join Mark Fellhauer from the Drew and Mike Show this and every Tuesday night for Riff Night at Leopard's Lounge and Broil. Mark will be there to make sure you and your buddies always have a great time and leave with lots of cool free stuff. Guys, remember, at Leopard's Lounge, you never pay a cover charge, ever. They even have free parking and, of course, the most beautiful women in the world. Leopard's Lounge and Broil in Windsor, just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge and Broil, where the party never stops. Transportation provided by Limousine Express.
101 WRIF, Miller High Life, and the UAW want you to roll on a ride and rock. And all for a great cause. It's the Rockin' Chopper Giveaway. The Riff is teamed up with Pole Boy Choppers to create a custom-built chopper. See it built from the ground up with our chopper cam at WRIF.com. Just purchase a $10 Rockin' Chopper raffle ticket. A portion of the proceeds will benefit the United Cerebral Palsy Foundation. One lucky ticket holder will win the ride in our big drawing in December. The Rockin' Chopper Giveaway. Brought to you by Miller High Life, Savor the Moment, the United Auto Workers, and 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
Here's the question. What are you worth? I mean, what are you worth in the job market? What skills and knowledge do you possess that create value for a company? Do you have what it takes for employers to pay you $65,000 a year on average? Do you have what it takes to start right out of school making $30,000 or $40,000 a year? Have you positioned yourself in the fastest growing industry rated by the United States federal government? Good questions. Tough answers. If you're stuck making less than $45,000 a year with no way to increase your income, it's time to visit computertraining.com. Log on to their website at www.computertraining.com and find out why their graduates are living their dreams by making an investment in themselves for a better tomorrow today. Please note up front that not everyone is qualified. You'll need to demonstrate that you have solid computer skills and a sincere desire to succeed in order to be accepted into their new Microsoft XP program. To learn more, visit www.computertraining.com and take the online entrance challenge. Again, that's computertraining.com, helping you build a better tomorrow today. Computertraining.com is not guaranteed job placement or job salary levels. Pay scales can be dramatically affected by employer size, industry, employee credentials, years of experience, and other factors.
Around the corner, around the county, at work or play, we're on your way to convenience stores of Speedway.
Now, shopping at Speedway is a whole lot more rewarding with the Speedy Rewards Card. It's fast, free, and easy. With the Speedy Rewards Card at Speedway, you'll earn points automatically, good for free gasoline and other exciting rewards, just for buying the gasoline and products you'd purchase anyway. Enroll today, and you'll get 500 bonus points, and you'll start earning free gasoline and other exciting rewards now. Come in and pick up your free Speedy Rewards Card today. And right now, when you use your Speedy Rewards Card at Speedway, you'll get 2 cents off every gallon of gasoline you buy automatically. That's right, 2 cents off every gallon of gas. The Speedy Rewards Card. It's fast, free, and easy. And now, you'll get 2 cents off every gallon of gasoline you buy when you use your Speedy Rewards Card. Only at Speedway.
We're on your way to convenience stores at Speedway. It's time to live the mortgage experts. 800-333-ROCK. 20 years in the lead. 800-333-ROCK. It's time to live.
And we want to say thank you to you, all of our clients out there. It's our 20-year anniversary, and we're excited. And right now, for folks that have credit card debt, you need to be careful. Credit card minimum payments are going to be doubling soon. So you want to consolidate that debt, and the mortgage experts can help you right now. If you call today, a mortgage expert can help you consolidate that credit card debt, reduce your payments now.
It's time to live. Yeah. 800-333-ROCK.
And Loans Company, Equal Housing Lender.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. You know, I always get, you probably do as well, always get these brochures for Dell computers. I forget, I even bought a Dell computer. He's like the eighth richest guy in America. Mr. Dell, can't even think what his first name is. Big Bush supporter. And I looked at Dell. Doesn't the E... Go look at it. A lot of you have Dell computers. A lot of you probably have promotional stuff around. Doesn't the E in Dell look exactly like the Enron E? Remember the Enron E kind of slanted backwards? Whatever happened to Ken Lay? Remember he was, what did Bush used to call him? Kenny Boy? Yeah, Kenny Boy. And then all of that just disappeared. That was one of the things why they decided to launch the Iraq War, was because all of that was kind of coming home to roost. All right, 313-298-WRIF. According to Bush, and what it was, he was really opening up on his critics, wasn't he? Let me see if where is that. Bush contends partisan critics hurt war effort. Hurt it. We're trying to stop it, you moron. Tony Blair, Bush's poodle, as they call him in England. Apparently, members of Parliament are organizing a campaign to impeach Tony Blair. They believe they have enough evidence to support to force a highly damaging House of Commons investigation into the Prime Minister's pre-war conduct. And we should be doing the same thing here. Because if Bushco, the whole crowd of these folks, lied purposely, knowing that there were no weapons of mass destruction, scared the piss out of us purposely in order to get us to support this war that wasn't necessary, but was for electoral purposes here and for command of oil resources there, well, they certainly, that's malfeasance in office and should be kicked out. And you go, okay, well, but everybody had the same intelligence. You know, they're all, this infallible government suddenly is admitting to all these mistakes. Turns out we were wrong. We were wrong. And then that's misfeasance. Support our oops. We got to keep supporting it, even though they screwed up so totally and thousands of people are dead. Shouldn't there be some sort of penalty for that? What do you do when you screw up that badly? Think of your own private life, anything at work or your personal life. When you screw up, there's a penalty. What penalty did these guys pay? For, well, I guess we were wrong on that. Turns out we were wrong. John writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Peter, can you explain? I always think I'm speaking so clearly, and I guess I'm not. Peter, can you explain what you meant by, quote, these people, in other words, the right-wingers, should be on the margins of society rather than the mainstream? He says, I don't understand what you mean. Well, what I mean by that is that people have lots of pretty nutty opinions about religion and biology and politics and what have you. And usually the real wackos, like the whole edifice of Bushco, are usually parked out on the far edges of society, not in the mainstream. They don't sit in the White House. They don't sit in the federal courts. They don't sit on the Supreme Court. Right? They don't. Yeah, sometimes they do serve in Congress. All right, let's get some of your calls. You want to call in 313-298-WRIF. Oh, we don't have what we usually have up there, which says next, so I'm going to take the person farthest away. This is Jim in Toledo. Jim, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Yeah, I don't know how you get away with talking some of those things you say.
Like what, Jim? About, like what?
You don't talk about sports. You don't talk about the entertainment section.
Yeah.
You just talk about intelligent things about politics, and I don't know how people let you get away with it.
Well, they're used to me after all these years.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is, huh?
Yeah.
But the intelligent design thing, it's just kind of like smoke and mirrors, I think. You know, the people talk about, you know, they want to bring religion into the... You can't really bring religion, like you can't mix religion with politics, stuff like that, you know what I mean?
Sure, I don't know why they insist on doing it. They have their churches, why don't they just do their deal there? I mean, every Sunday they can say that Darwin's wrong, it's intelligent design, or it was created in 6 or 7 or 8 days, or whatever they say. I don't know, so, you know, let them do it, it's their deal, it's a free country. But why do they always got to shove this stuff down our throats?
Yes, I agree with you.
yeah. All right. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling in from Toledo. I guess I will just kind of randomly do things here. Here's Gary from Detroit. Gary, welcome. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi, Pete. You were talking about the creationist thing in Dover. Well, did you see the article on Yahoo News about Pat Robertson's comments on this?
I didn't mention him before about he was saying God is going to strike him dead.
Oh, I didn't hear you bring to say that. Yeah, he was basically saying that well, don't be surprised if destruction comes upon you, and don't go looking to God because he's not going to be there for you. I'd just like to say, as a Christian, Pat Robertson seriously embarrasses me.
Well, you know, in a way he shouldn't, because... I mean, people that identify themselves often with the same kind of politics that I do and make an ass of themselves or say something stupid, I don't, you know, people say to me, well, what about what do you call it said? And I say, so what? What does that have to do with me? And there's enough Christians, there's enough Christian evangelicals that are on the left and that are liberal that no one has to be embarrassed. But he's an embarrassment. Pat Robertson is an embarrassment to the human race. Because he's so mean and evil, and he should be paying, he and his church should be paying such big taxes because they violate the tax code all the time by his partisanism.
Well, you know, a lot of people bring up the idea of taxing churches a lot of times. Frankly, I think it'd just be a waste of money, because what they just end up doing is, really some of these large super churches, they would just hire the same tax lawyers the corporations do, and they just get around it. And we'd be paying taxes for the bureaucracy to try and collect taxes from them that they avoided.
There you go. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Thanks for joining us at 313-298-WRIF. Here's Maurice in Inkster. Maurice, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks.
You know what I think about Bush and his cabinet?
What?
He should be tried for treason and shot.
Oh, I'm against capital punishment. I think they ought to make Bush get like a normal job like he's never had before, something that his daddy didn't get him, and see if he could do something without screwing up.
The fool couldn't do it.
Yeah. But listen, you know what, Maurice? I mean, I know you're just trying to do what you know, they call hyperbole. You're trying to, you know, saying the great dislike, but just too much killing. Let's not even talk about that. He ought to just be, I don't know, maybe he should be, when we find out what was really done, if we do find out that this was not a mistake about the intelligence, that it was purposeful, that maybe he belongs not just in an impeachment trial, but in a war crimes trial as well. But that's yet to be shown. But I'm...
Peter, one more thing.
Sure.
Let's say congratulations to the 2006 world champion Pistons.
All right.
Basketball rocks, baby.
All right, Maurice, thank you very much. Thanks for calling in from Inkster, which reminded me of, where did that go? Oh, yeah. You know, I never watch television. Why was I watching it? Every once in a while, I want to see how things are presented on television, some issue. I can't remember what it was. But they had this deal where Muhammad Ali, one of my heroes, Muhammad Ali, the greatest, of course, was going to get one of these medals of freedom. Of course, they've been debased totally, because last year Bush pinned the medal on CIA director George Tenet. You remember? I mean, he's the guy that that they were just talking about. Turns out we were wrong. We got bad intelligence. Well, who the hell did they get the intelligence from? Well, they got it from George Tenet and the CIA. He said, it's a slam dunk. That was his words. A little sports analogy there that they used that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. How come you knew, so many of you, that there were no weapons of mass destruction? And L. Paul Bremer, he was the viceroy of Iraq for a while. But so they're giving these awards out to about 14 people, including Detroit's Aretha Franklin. And so Muhammad Ali comes up there, and he's moving slow, man. He's got Parkinson's bad. You know, no matter how great a fighter he was, got bumped a little too many times in the head. But I mean, he's, you know, his brain's there. So Bush kind of makes this. Do you see this or hear this? He makes this kind of, well, I can't. I'm starting to demonstrate. I got to say this on the radio, don't I? He puts up his fist like in a mock fight, and Ali looks at him and twirls his finger around his temple, making the crazy sign. And then he goes back. He's led. Actually, it was sad. He was led back to his seat, and he does the same motion again, like Bush is crazy. And one of the things too that remember. That let me see, was on here, this is in this article here from the Washington Post, was Ali making a political statement? In his remarks about the fighter, Bush mentioned the Olympic gold medal, the grit, the quote, the Ali shuffle, the lightning jabs, the sheer guts and determination he brought to every fight, close quote. Bush did not mention Ali's very public opposition to the Vietnam War, which led the prize fighter to lose his boxing license for 3 years when he refused to serve in the Army. All right? He's not going to mention that. You know, even we and the news have been making a lot of pointing to the fact that the Army is in the worst recruiting slump in decades. The worst recruiting slump in decades. Can't fill its ranks. The Army is closing the books on one of the leanest recruiting years. One of the leanest recruiting years since it became an all-volunteer service 30 years ago. Missing its enlistment target by the largest margin since 1979 and raising questions about its plans for growth. Now, I mean, I can't imagine that people are going into the service at this point, given that they may be sent into this meat grinder to, at best, kill bunches of people who don't deserve it at all, and at worst, getting killed or severely injured themselves. Well, for those of you who want to see those roles filled, the number of new recruits who scored, well, they've filled it. They filled the ranks for last month. The number of new recruits who scored at the bottom of the Army's aptitude test tripled last month, according to the Pentagon, helping the nation's largest armed forces meet its October recruiting goal, but raising concerns about the quality of the force. So what they did, they're only supposed to allow 4% of the Army to be have these low scores, and this month they allowed it up to 14. To achieve last month's recruiting targets, 12% of those accepted in the Army had the lowest acceptable results. They scored between 16 and 30 points out of a possible 99 on the aptitude test that quizzes potential soldiers on general science, mathematics, and world knowledge. So some of these people got as low as 16. Now, I know this test, and I've seen it, and the majority of you listening, probably, let's say as an average, could probably get 75, 80. Right. They're not hard at all. They're real low level. They want to make sure you got some basic information about life. And those of you who are real bright, you would be getting 90, 95, maybe even all of them right. They're that easy. So the United States Army is allowing in people that got 16 right. Now, I don't want to disparage these people. People among us are challenged in terms of their intelligence level. And they should be loved, they should be protected, they should be helped. But they don't belong with their finger on an M16 or some other weapon of destruction that they have to make some snap decision about this family walking along or driving in a car. Are they the enemy or are they innocent people? This is what Bushco has led us to. This is awful. Absolutely awful. And we cannot allow these at best incompetents and at worst criminals to continue to decide public policy from now until January 20th, 2009. I'm Peter Werby. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Call talkyes at yahoo.com is our email address. And let's take Manuel from Monroe. Hi, it's Peter, and you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going? Doing all right?
Doing great.
Good, good. Like you got some pretty good opinions there. I definitely respect them.
Thank you.
You do your homework, that's for sure. I enjoy hearing all on the radio shows about the talk about the weapons of mass destruction and where they're at and were they really ever there. And having served in the Army for 15 months in 2003 in Iraq, I can tell you, sir, that if they weren't there, they were on their way, because our first camp was actually an underground chemical facility. And you know what? If they weren't made yet, they were pretty darn close.
Why does Bush say that there wasn't? I mean, they had these extensive searches. The Bush spent tens of millions of dollars of our tax dollars to try to find them, and he never came up with it. I mean, you would think it would be to his advantage to come up to a conclusion like you're saying, but the president's spokesperson just said we were wrong. There weren't any.
Well, yeah, I can't validate why they said there was tons of this and that, but all I know is that's where our camp was on, and actually we had a roadside bomb go off that was actually was supposed to be a chemical roadside bomb, but it wasn't put together properly. So, you know, thank God for that.
Sure.
They were on the brink of it. Now, you know, whether it was right or not to say all that, and obviously it was wrong to manipulate the minds of people if that's what was done. But, I really don't want to wait and fight someone who has that capability when the time does have to come. I'd rather.
Wait a minute. Now, you had one personal experience. How can you expand that into systems of weapons of mass destruction to the extent that they actually were some threat to us? In other words, I mean, you're saying that I'm not even sure what you were sitting on, but I mean, maybe that was the only one in all of Iraq.
Maybe it was. I don't know, but I know that it was too close for comfort.
Well, I can imagine. Yeah, I mean, being there must have been too close for comfort, but I'm glad you made it back. All right. All right, I got to cut you short because I got to do these commercials. Thank you for joining us.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
The new hits just came in, but Media Play is blowing them out at $8.99. Hit CDs and thousands of DVDs, $8.99.
Santana and Slipknot,
$8.99.
The new Now 20 hits,
$8.99.
Blink 182,
$8.99.
CDs and DVDs, $8.99. 50 Cent and Poetry,
$8.99.
Neil Diamond and Kenny Chesney,
$8.99.
The fucking Beastie Boys,
$8.99.
And if you want the low price on the newly released DVD, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, you have to beat us. CDs and DVDs,
$8.99.
This week at Media Play,
it's the free U College giveaway. Use your MasterCard card or complete an entry form at Media Play, and you could win a one-time payment of $150,000 toward college tuition.
No purchase necessary. Ends December 31st. Open to U.S. residents 18 or over. For rules and alternate entry details, visit Media Play today or MediaPlay.com.
Located in Livonia, Utica, Taylor, Clinton Township, and Ann Arbor.
$8.99.
Looking for the ideal home for your family? Right now, you can save up to $15,000 on select Robertson Brothers homes located throughout southeastern Michigan. Consider the Links at Fellows Creek. Located in Canton, this property features a lush golf course as well as attached garages. Condos start in the 150s. Or visit the Links of Independence. Located in Clarkston and priced in the low 200s, these condominiums feature first floor master suites, a community clubhouse, and more. Or check out Northwick Villas in Troy. Priced from the low 300s, these condominiums offer dramatic 2- and 3-bedroom floor plans along with a location that's second to none. All models are open daily from noon to 6. To learn more, visit Robertson-Brothers.com. Don't wait. These special prices are only good through the end of the year. Visit us today for your best selection. Plus, when you visit any Robertson Brothers property, you can enter to win a 42-inch Sony HD TV. Prices and availability subject to change without notice. Drawing will be held on 12/5. No purchase necessary to win.
Honey, what's wrong? Why are you so miserable?
It's starting to get cold outside.
So?
So, no more parties on the deck.
Yeah, we always end up going to John's house in the winter. It's because we have no room inside. And besides that, they have that awesome rock and roll rec room Hamilton built for them.
I know, he doesn't stop bragging about it at all the parties. And the annoying way he chants their phone number, 586-215-2810.
Baby, we should do it.
Oh, come here, you.
No, you dog. I mean, we should call Hamilton Homes and bring the party outside inside. You keep telling me Hamilton Homes is a premier home builder specializing in working with homeowners for all of their home remodeling needs.
They do, and we'll be able to party with our friends and family here inside this winter, plus all the extra room for the kids' stuff and storage space.
Oh, did you say storage space? Call them today. Do it now.
All right, I'm dialing. 586-215-2810.
Bring the party outside, inside, with the quality, craftsmanship, design, and customer service that you deserve. Hamilton Homes, 586-215-2810.
Get your adrenaline pumping and feel the excitement with the Michelob Ultra Extreme Adventure Giveaway on the Rift. We provide the grand prize trip for you and a guest. All you need to do is choose your own adventure. Hit the powder skiing and snowboarding the slopes in Colorado. Explore the rapids as you go kayaking in the Canadian wilderness. Or how about some fun in the sun, diving and snorkeling in the Caribbean? Just keep it locked on 101 WRIF for your chance to win. Or register to win in person at Ultra Extreme Adventure parties around the Motor City. It's the Ultra Extreme Adventure Giveaway with Michelob Ultra. Lose the carbs, not the taste. And 101 WRIF.
When my son started having behavior problems, the total transformation techniques were like the instruction manual on how to deal with him. We got immediate results.
Ever wish your kid came with an instruction manual when he's disrespectful, defiant, or even abusive? Do you know how to fix it? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior right now with the Total Transformation. The program then helps you fix every behavior problem under the sun. Defiance, backtalking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. There's no screaming, no fighting, no frustration. The Total Transformation is the program I've used for over 30 years to solve even the worst behavior problems. Your child will listen to you again, and you'll get peace and sanity back into your home. I guarantee it.
Call now and get How to Turn Your Child's Attitude Around in 1 minute or less free with your order. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185. Call now. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome to our second hour. If you're just joining us, we've been talking for about an hour. We've been talking about how Bush says he didn't mislead on the war, according to his national security advisor. But he says, turns out, we were wrong. We were wrong. He doesn't say sorry about that, but essentially he's saying, support our oops. That's what he's saying. And attacked people that were, what was the phrase here? I can't remember what it was, but he hit it. Oh, yeah. Bush contends partisan critics hurt war effort. Well, yeah, we're trying to hurt it so badly that it will stop, that there won't be any more death and destruction, that the killing of Iraqis, the death of American soldiers will end. Bush, at least he stopped calling for sacrifice because, of course, he and no one in his family are doing any sacrifice at all. I mean, the rich don't go over there and fight. Where was that? Never mind. I was going to get this quote, but I can get it for you later. Now, one of the things, remember we were talking, is that misfeasance in office, that is just these people are just absolute incompetence. And if we're to accept Bushko at face value, turns out we were wrong and it has such awful consequences. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people dead, Americans and Iraqis. That is such an error. Such a bad decision. We had bad intelligence. Well, it was your intelligence, man. Yeah, it wasn't anyone else's. You had to evaluate it. There were millions of us that knew that it was, quote, bad intelligence. This, again, is assuming it's misfeasance and wasn't a purposely crafted lie that Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell and Rumsfeld and Cheney and Bush himself weren't purposely lying to the American people to justify a war that was absolutely unnecessary and has caused all these horrors and this loss of our treasury, the destruction of a country, Iraq. But we're giving them the benefit of the doubt here. So it's not malfeasance, not purposely evil lying, which I think it is. But we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say, no, it turns out we were wrong. And so what's the consequences for being that wrong? Just go on. Don't interfere with the war effort. Support our oops. All right, but here, this is a flat-out lie. I mean, Bush, I mean, does he really think, what planet is this guy on that he can say, we do not torture? Bush on Monday defended U.S. interrogation practices and called the treatment of terrorism suspects lawful. We do not torture, Bush declared in response to reports of secret CIA prisons overseas. Now, we could, and I'm willing to entertain that debate about whether torture not only works. I mean, most everyone is against it, other than these guys like Bush and Cheney, who probably, when they hear about these reports, probably have to, probably have a Kleenex box real close to them, because there couldn't be any real reason that they would want to maintain torture. The military does not want torture approved. Certainly the politicians, John McCain, who was tortured himself, and almost all the Republicans voted for this bill that would outlaw cruel and unusual punishment of people that are under United States control. And it is simply these very frightening people. When you think about what is the mind of a torturer, because one of the things you have to do, you think, I don't care what happens to those people. Yeah, they're going to do this or that to us. Well, maybe some are, maybe some aren't. What happens when you allow torture is that everybody that comes into your hands gets tortured. It's like old-fashioned police brutality that used to be in the big cities, may still happen for all I know, but it used to be that whenever you came into a Chicago police station or a Detroit police station or a New Orleans police station or a New York police station, you got knocked around a little. You got knocked around a little, and whether you were innocent or not. It was essentially showing who's boss. And that might be some of what Bush and Cheney are all about. I mean, they said they'll veto the whole defense budget if this bill that the Senate passed is still in it, forbidding the United States to torture people. And you think about it, put a face on it. It's not the United States torturing somebody. To some extent, it is. I mean, our standing in the world, this whole idea that we have some moral high ground, which is just turned out to be this awful joke. I mean, that disappears. But there are people that we give the okay to. And what happens when you get tortured? I've read about this. I don't want to go on too much about it. It's so frightening. When you walk into an interrogation center, which is really a torture center, the first thing you do is you are beaten up. No questions asked, nothing. But you know that you are going to be hurt badly. And what happens if you don't? Well, partly that some of the faulty intelligence came through torture, and this one guy just said, "Yeah, but we got weapons of mass destruction, and we're connected up with Al Qaeda and all of that, you know, this Iraqi." And of course, it turned out to be absolutely faulty intelligence. But what they wanted was someone saying that. So, anyways, Bush declares we do not torture, and Bush supported an effort spearheaded by Vice President Dick Cheney to block or modify a proposed Senate-passed ban on torture. So, right now, under Bush Co., and it stops there. I mean, Cheney appears to be so much more evil than Bush. Rumsfeld the same. But ultimately, it's Bush Co. It's a Bush government. And they have transformed this country into a torture state, an illegal outlaw state, a torture state that's committed crimes against peace by its illegal invasion of Iraq based on nothing. It turns out we were wrong, they say. Cruel distortion. We do not torture. Is the president serious? This is an editorial in the Boulder Daily Paper, Boulder, Colorado. At times, President Bush inspires a kind of awe, the paper says. It is a rare individual who can repeat obvious falsehoods with so much tenacity and conviction that millions of listeners eventually mistake them for the truth. I actually don't entirely agree with that because I think we know a lie. I mean, how can he say that? We do not torture. We've seen the photos. People defend torture. It's not like they're denying. No, we didn't. All those people that died under torture, those dozens of people that have been beaten to death by American interrogators, that's not a question. According to this editorial in the Boulder paper, the president was in top form on Monday when he spoke at a news conference in Panama on the subject of torture. A few days earlier, the Washington Post had reported that the CIA is operating secret prisons in Eastern Europe and Asia where detainees have disappeared from view with no charges filed against them and no monitoring by the International Red Cross. Disturbing as it was, the Post report was only the latest of many indications that the abuse of detainees is tolerated and sometimes actively encouraged by the United States government. By Bushko. By the man who's the attorney general now. By all these people around Bush who said we don't have to follow the Geneva Accords. Why the military wants these accords followed and why they support this Senate bill against torture is what are we going to say when our men or women are captured and they begin being interrogated, tortured, waterboarded, doing all these awful things to them? What, and remember, during the initial invasion, some of these captured American soldiers were paraded on television, and the United States population and the politicians were indignant that this was a violation of, and you can't do this. You can't display prisoners as war trophies. You can follow the rest of it. When asked about the reports, Bush had this to say. We do not torture. According to the paper, the remarks had an oddly paternalistic tone, as if Bush were lecturing a room full of children on the dangers of wandering into dark alleys. But the real clincher was, we do not torture. It can be interpreted in only one of three ways. The president was, one, lying, two, clueless, or three, working with his own private definition of torture. And then they go on to just document all this torture. Why do we have these people still in office? And are they going to be in office until January 20th, 2009? Hi, this is WRF. You're on the air. Welcome. It's Peter Werby with you. Brian from Windsor. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks.
First of all, I'd like to applaud you for talking about these topics that nobody else seems to want to talk about. I'd like to discuss America's culture of torture as a means for extracting information from prisoners of war. I mean, The ironic part is that it's nothing hidden. I mean, we all seem to know about it. We know about Guantanamo Bay. We know about the Abu Ghraib fiasco. But now we hear about these secret torture camps all over Eastern Europe and Asia. And you have Bush and Cheney, the leaders of your great democracy, arguing that torture is both effective and appropriate. I mean, it just seems to never stop with this administration. They've moved so far to the right that they're almost becoming a modern dictatorship. I mean, hidden behind this cloak of great American democracy.
Yeah, well, why do the military, then, why do they support this ban on torture if it's so effective? They know it's not effective. And they know it, and they know that eventually it'll jeopardize American men under their command.
Not only that, I mean, I think it's affecting America's legitimacy in the rest of the world. I mean, America is a part of the Geneva Convention, yet they don't seem to respect that treaty at all.
No, absolutely not. No. All right, thanks for making our show international. I appreciate it, Brian. Let's go out to Lost Wages. Vince, hi. Thanks for joining us from Las Vegas.
How are you there?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining.
Two really good valid points here. Number one thing is the acceptance for the military. They've lowered their standards, and you're right. It's recruitment is a little low, and it probably should be with the economy doing as well as it is. Those people have to have somewhere to go, whether it's the military at 18 or whether it's in corporate America. And I think with their standards being low, if the military doesn't give them a certain, so to speak, direction in life, then how is anything else going to help them that with that? And that's one little quick point there. As far as torture,
Let me back up. So you're saying that actually by lowering the standards, you're doing a favor for people that otherwise wouldn't have much of a shot at life.
Well, I'm not shot at life, but at 18 years old, let's say you're not the brightest guy or the brightest girl around right now, and you're not sure about, hey, if this is whatever it is academically, you didn't really like academics, but you need a certain military guidance, and aptitude is just a general placement for an individual on an area of the military where they need to go.
I don't agree, but go ahead.
It doesn't necessarily.
I mean, it's desperation on the part of these recruiters that can't get the level of recruit that they would like, so they've had to lower their standards significantly, even in terms of their own standards.
When you go back to the Ronald Reagan years, their standards are very high with ages and the type of classifications. I mean, their recruitment was high in the 80s. They had the brightest people we have right now running the country now, and it was all implemented during the Ronald Reagan era of 600 shit Navy and their standards were high. Lowering their standards at, like you said, at 15% right or wrong, that's lower infantry, basic seaman knowledge. It's somebody that is stepping in the door of the military. And I think that they could be, the military is good for that. I think everyone should probably think about joining the military for at least a year or 2 years.
Kind
of service to their country.
Whatever. What's the other point?
The other point's torture.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not surprising. Nobody's surprised about torture. I don't condone it. I don't think it's right. I don't think any of us think it's the proper thing to go about. But interrogation and figuring out, there's people out there that want to harm our way of life.
Yeah.
And to beat up the a few people, what they did in the military, and a few people that are in the police force or whatever, to put them down and say, hey, you know, everybody beats them up, Rodney King people are this way or police officers that way, it's not true. The fact is that you need some enforcement. You need to interrogate. You need to.
Well, they found out since that the interrogation practices, the so-called third degree, has in many ways, because the Miranda rights and forced confessions haven't been accepted and what have you, that over the last 30 or 40 years, the convictions have not dropped off. In fact, what really happened, as we saw with all those death penalty cases that were overturned, that the Chicago police had been torturing confessions out of people, out of innocent people. And that I have never met a police officer that have said that following the Constitution, which forbids cruel and unusual punishment and a host of other things to make law enforcement consistent with what we say are democratic principles, that they were in any way hobbled by having to adhere to law and to the Constitution and what have you. And what you start to have, brutal cops are corrupt cops both way around. Brutal cops are corrupt cops. Corrupt cops are brutal cops. So one of the you don't want to allow either in your system. And the same thing goes with soldiers. And so what you begin to have is that then anyone who comes in contact with males that are potential insurgents in Iraq wind up with their hands bound, blindfolded, and treated in a manner that is inconsistent with the values that this country supposedly is founded on, and now Bush says he's trying to install over there. So what you have then are people that begin to despise the United States, see us as this vile invader, and that all of our soldiers, whatever their intent is or was for the veterans, is just blown apart by the way they act. So there's never that torture of the manner that has been carried out in such widespread manner is justifiable. Thanks, Vince, for calling in from Las Vegas. I guess you got us on the internet. Here is Todd from River Rouge. Todd, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
How you doing today, Peter?
Good, thanks.
Good. A little bit off your subject.
No, it's okay.
What are we going to do in regards to corporate America when they feel as if they don't need to take care of their employees any longer, that they've been bound to with contractual agreements? Filing bankruptcy and the United States government allowing them to no longer fulfill those contractual obligations, such as health care, like U.S. Steel and River Rouge, E-Course.
Yeah, well, we're just, unless we do something, we're just kind of screwed.
Well, what can we do?
Well, see, one of the things that happens in this this country is it's the politics of blackmail. So it's either auto workers either give in, even though we, the corporate brains, are the ones that screwed up because it's our policy. The men and women that are carrying out the orders, they didn't do anything wrong. So it's the suits that are the problem. Yet it's the average man and woman who are going to pay the penalty. So what are we going to do? I don't know. I'm not the general of the popular resistance, and because we're not ready for that yet. I don't mean that there shouldn't be leadership and people that become prominent spokespeople, but right now we are just figuring it out. For one thing, we're taking all these hammer blows, people that have worked their butts off, that expected to be taken care of as promised by a municipality or a corporation or a company, and suddenly are told, hey, you don't have any health care anymore, or you're going to have to pay thousands of dollars more a year to get what in most countries is a matter of right, at least in the Western industrial countries.
Exactly.
So I don't have any, you hear me stumbling. I don't know what to do next. Let's call a general strike. That would be cool.
That's what we need to do. And then what's also sickening is, in regards to corporate America, not the municipalities, obviously, is these bonuses that these managers, CEOs, CFOs are receiving, and yet the working man is the one that's paying the price.
Sure. Sure. I mean, what's beginning to happen is suddenly we're like in the Wizard of Oz, where the curtain is being drawn back. So the next thing we have to do, first is realization. First is getting over the, the word to use, to realize that we're getting fooled again, to kind of paraphrase the old Who song. And we always say, won't get fooled again, and then we get fooled again. And so then how do we move? How do we move beyond just the recognition? Well, that's the tough one, because there's no real opposition party. There's no mass movement. There's no general spokesperson. And the class war that's being successfully practiced upon us by the upper classes, they kind of look down and they say, well, what are they doing? They figured this out a little. They're calling talk radio shows. But have they done anything politically? No. Have they done anything direct action? No. Have they done, and they kind of go, no. So they say, well, let's, we've made a fortune on the gasoline prices. Let's kick it back to $2.13 a gallon. And that'll quiet them for a while. So it's kind of up to us. There's no meeting. I mean, there are some meetings tomorrow, little ones, but nothing that approaches what we need. And we've all better start thinking about it, or we're going to wind up to be a third world country.
Yes, as free Americans, we all need to get back together and get back to what America stands for.
You got it.
Land of the free. Another thing,
yeah.
If you don't mind.
Sure.
Homeland Security.
Yeah.
I'm a police officer in a bordering community, international border community. I haven't seen any training yet in regards to Homeland Security. I don't know how our government can say that we're all secure and we're spending all this money and teaching and informing our first responders, which is local law enforcement, for our safety, when that, quite frankly, isn't happening yet. Not in our part of the world, anyways. And, you know, we are in one of the most economically advanced societies there are here in Michigan. So,
well, yeah, I don't know where I saw this, but there was this Republican sort of memo about what they can do to restore Republican popularity, and they say one of the things that would restore it, if there was another major terrorist attack on the United States, that people would galvanize behind Bush. Man, I think if that happened, he'd probably be driven from office. You know, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter if I repeat myself. If Al Gore would have been president on September 11, 2001, the Republicans probably would have move to impeach him. And, you know, I would not have objected at all. If somebody dropped the ball that badly, whatever the conditions were, because one of the things are, I mean, think about yourself and the kind of responsibilities you have as a police officer, and think of the multitude of ways that you could screw up. I mean, I'm sure every time you make a decision that's important, you think about what this is going to result in and what the consequences are for you, right?
Have a split second to make that decision.
Yeah. I know. And if you screw up, there's bad consequences for you. So what about these guys in power, whether they're the head of corporations or the head of governments or the head of cities? I mean, how come when they make mistakes, nothing bad happens to them? I don't get it. Oh, well. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Let's see here. Bart's Law Number 2. Who is Bart? Let's see. Maybe it's Bart. No, it's Richard. Bart's Law Number 2. Anytime, I don't even know what I'm reading. What if I read something crazy? Anytime a person or entity makes a mistake that puts extra money or power in their pocket, expect them to make that mistake again and again and again. That's why refineries have fires now and then, because a fire allows them to scream unexpected shortage so they can gouge us on the price of gas. Who benefits from the chaos in Iraq? Huh. Oh, this is... You know, I didn't even know these people were still going. It's bartcop.com, like Bart Simpson, except it's nothing to do with that. Bartcop, B-A-R-T-C-O-P, .com, bartcop.com. Whoa, this is a pretty wild site here. Check this out, bartcom.com. All right, let's go back to, we got a lot of time to get these calls in. Here is Joe out in Keego Harbor. Joe, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Yeah, we're talking about accountability.
Yeah.
So, in other words, if someone makes a huge mistake, not a mistake, but wrong decision, they're accountable, correct?
Right.
Okay, the Senate Intelligence Committee that said go to war.
Yeah.
Was the 9 of them, you can check, were Democratic majority. So how come we're not holding them accountable?
Well, there wasn't a Democratic majority. How could there be?
There was a Democratic majority on the Senate Intelligence Committee when they went to war. Look it up.
Look, Joe, I don't want to argue about facts, but the party with the, that has the majority in Congress has a majority on every committee. And the Senate Intelligence Committee had a majority of Republicans.
There's only one person that voted against the war. There's only one.
On the committee?
No, on the whole Senate and the Congress. There's only one person.
No, man. There's 23 Democrats that did, including Michigan Senator Levin and Michigan Senator Debbie Stabenow. They knew, like anybody that bothered to look, that there were no weapons of mass destruction, and this was the biggest scam in the world. And people like Kerry and Edwards and Senator Clinton knew it as well, and they were just opportunistically going along for the ride because they didn't think they could stop the big, Bush machine. So they were awful because of that. But that's the big scam. The Democrats voted for it too. Well, 23 of them didn't, to their credit.
It's died on American soil, and you won't even acknowledge.
What are you saying? I didn't hear what you.
I know you won't let anybody talk. That's why.
Well, go ahead.
Clinton could have had Bin Laden, and he refused to do it. And 3,000 Americans died on American soil because.
Oh, so this was Clinton's fault, even though that Bush was the president, huh? Even though that he got a memo telling him that that Bin Laden was going to strike soon in the United States, and he just cleared brush. So it's all Clinton's fault. I mean, how many years into this all will people like yourself keep blaming Clinton?
Didn't say that. Can I talk?
Well, maybe, maybe not. You're not... All right. I don't even want to bother with people like you. Let's see here. Where is our next caller? Let's go to Jim and Lapeer. Jim, hi. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for calling.
My God, I didn't think we'd have to go through that tonight.
Well, there you go. You know, there are still about 25% of the people left that listen to the... If you listen just for 2 or 3 minutes, that's all I would ever bother, to these right-wing talk shows, they are still... that's what they're saying, just what he said. He just, listened to one of those shows and repeated it.
All due respect, how far do we have to beat up an ex-president? Do we go back to Carter for... During the 70s when mistakes happened then?
I think it was Truman's fault. I think it was Truman's fault.
Yeah, I agree. But I'd like to actually answer your question about the Malthians and Misfians. I think it's a combination of both.
Yeah, I do too.
I had a very lengthy discussion with my brother-in-law who's still in the United States Air Force, and he's neither there nor here. But I told him, I said, listen to your program and hear what's going on, and then see what you see. He's like, well, I'd like to see. I'm like, well, open your eyes a little more, my friend.
Uh-huh.
There's so much. I mean, if you want to look at the United States government as a business, how long would it have taken for Bush to have been brought down for this many screw-ups, whether information or just plain incompetence?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I'd have been fired a long time ago from any job I've worked at if I did FUBAR at this bed using military terminology.
You know, that's interesting. I just heard that. I wonder how many people know what FUBAR means. I don't think we can say it. It means fouled up beyond all recognition or repair.
Right.
Yeah, depend. Yeah, yeah.
I remember that the first time I heard that during my very short stint in the military. And thanks to a recruiter, kind of hosed me out of being able to actually have a career. But, that's neither here nor there. But I did serve my short time in, and I was able to help open up a can of worms that nobody knew existed.
Mm-hmm.
Lots and lots of whiteout.
They
love that. I'm sure they're probably doing the same tactic now. Oh, you had concussion then. It almost killed you. Oh, no, they never saw that. Never knew that.
Wow. You know, Jim, one of the things that we were saying earlier about what can people do, and for people like yourself or others that are veterans, there are any number of groups, including one called Veterans for Peace, that are extremely active and extremely valuable in getting rid of that sense that everybody that's against the war, of course, majority of people against the war now are somehow, anti-military or something like that. So you can go, if you want to check it out, there is this this website. I think it's veteransforpeace.org or it's veteransforpeace.com, one or the other. I think .org.
Okay. But I know for some of my other friends who've attempted to go in have been ousted over the most laughable hiccups. They had a back problem before they ever went in. It never amounted to anything. But the minute it raises its weary head in the military, you lied, go out. Now we're talking about brigging you and such. And I had the same statement thrown at me. I thank God my, you know, commanding officer and my DI were there to say, no, this guy's really, he's the real deal. He came here. He came with humor, as crazy as that was. I was known because I had made the biggest tease. I wanted to sneak a Hummer off base. And like, why in the hell would you do that?
Well, yeah, good question.
I want a hell of a hunting vehicle. And they're like, where the hell do you live? Michigan. I'd take a nice big ambulance Hummer and convert it into the most awesome looking hunting vehicle where I don't get stuck. I just keep trucking.
There you go. All right, Jim, thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. Talking about right-wing shows, where was I hearing one they were using Won't Turn Back by Tom Petty? I'm thinking, man, do they realize, I mean, how can anybody be a rocker and a right-winger? I never understood that. I know there are some. There's a few, but rock and roll is so not right-wing, isn't it?
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
At most business schools, the teachers get their experience in the classroom. But at Walsh College, the teachers get their experience in the boardroom. So you'll learn the real world of business from successful business leaders, which means you'll have the technological expertise and business savvy you need to get the job you've always wanted. That's what makes your Walsh MBA so valuable, and why literally hundreds of companies recruit at Walsh College every year. To find out how you can fit a Walsh business degree into your life, call us or visit our website, Walsh College, the power to succeed.
Call 1-800-WALSH-01 or visit their website at walshcollege.edu. For express admission, Walsh offers walk-in Wednesdays. Visit their Novi, Clinton Township, or Troy campuses any Wednesday from 8:30 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Here's a question. What are you worth? I mean, what are you worth in the job market? What skills and knowledge do you possess that create value for a company? Do you have what it takes for employers to pay you $65,000 a year on average? Do you have what it takes to start right out of school making $30,000 or $40,000 a year? Have you positioned yourself in the fastest growing industry rated by the United States federal government? Good questions. Tough answers. If you're stuck making less than $45,000 a year with no way to increase your income, it's time to visit computertraining.com. Log on to their website at www.computertraining.com. And find out why their graduates are living their dreams by making an investment in themselves for a better tomorrow today. Please note up front that not everyone is qualified. You'll need to demonstrate that you have solid computer skills and a sincere desire to succeed in order to be accepted into their new Microsoft XP program. To learn more, visit www.computertraining.com and take the online entrance challenge. Again, that's computertraining.com, helping you build a better tomorrow today. Computertraining.com does not guarantee job placement or job salary levels. Pay scales can be dramatically affected by employer size, industry, employee credentials, years of experience, and other factors.
When my son started having behavior problems, the total transformation techniques were like the instruction manual on how to deal with him. We got immediate results.
Ever wish your kid came with an instruction manual? When he's disrespectful, defiant, or even abusive? Do you know how to fix it? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior right now with the Total Transformation. The program that helps you fix every behavior problem under the sun. Defiance, backtalking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. There's no screaming, no fighting, no frustration. The Total Transformation is the program I've used for over 30 years to solve even the worst behavior problems. Your child will listen to you again, and you'll get peace and sanity back into your home. I guarantee it.
Call now and get How to Turn Your Child's Attitude Around in 1 minute or less free with your order. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185. Call now. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185.
Hey, Napoleon, where are you going?
I'm going to Waterloo to meet my enemies.
But you could get defeated if you go there.
Who cares? It's over for me anyway. My wife, Josephine, she's divorcing me. She has this tough lawyer who wants to take everything. My palace at Versailles, all the fancy medals I win.
Oh.
Even my faithful horse, Pierre.
Well, there's no reason for a man to lose his home, his children, his money, or his self-respect.
Oh.
Now, Adam is here to protect you. Adam is the American Divorce Association for Men.
Ah.
They're a group of highly qualified divorcees. divorce attorneys and counselors who will defend the rights of men in any divorce case.
Ooh.
Adam will answer your questions about divorce at no charge. Call the American Divorce Association for Men.
Hello, this is Napoleon the Great speaking.
Who is that, you nappy daddy?
Josephine, what do you want from me now?
Adam is handling your divorce.
Yes, so?
Well, maybe after you conquer the rest of Europe, we could have lunch. I mean, it's nothing to lose your head over.
Call Adam at 248-356-ADAM. That's 248-356-ADAM.
From the shows to the clubs, from the nightlife to the dining, Vegas is the only place to celebrate New Year's. Go to visitlasvegas.com to start planning your trip.
Today, every business owner is looking for choices that can save them money. So you'll be glad to know that Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan now offers Flexible Blue, innovative new health plans with more choices, more control, and potentially much lower premiums than you're paying today. Flexible Blue plans are money-saving health plans with a health savings account option. Health savings accounts, or HSAs, let your employees take control of their health care expenses with tax-free funds they invest and control, sort of like a health care 401k. Any unused funds roll over each year. There's a debit card to help employees make payments easier, and new online health resources to help make informed decisions. Flexible Blue lets you offer employees the unsurpassed nationwide access of Blue Cross Blue Shield at a price that could be less than you're currently paying. Contact your local independent Blues agent or your Blues sales representative today. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan is a nonprofit corporation and an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thanks a lot. This is our final segment of call-in. Then at 1 a.m. Eastern Time, I say that because many of you are listening in different parts of the country, different parts of the world. And we're going to have an interview with an author who spent an appreciable amount of time in Venezuela, and he has written a book called The Battle of Venezuela about Hugo Chavez, the elected president, and the attempt to overthrow him by forces inside the country, backed by the United States, and also about the avian flu scare and who's going to be benefiting from all of it. All right, I want to remind you too about the new film, the video Walmart: The High Cost of Low Price. There's going to be 7,000 screenings across the United States. Most of them are free. In fact, I think about 99% of them are free. It's a Robert Greenwald film, and you can go to walmartmovie.com. Walmartmovie.com. There's no matter where you are. Well, it's maybe if you're in a foreign country and listening. But Canada, I know there are. If you're in, I know, isn't there some one of you listening in Tasmania and Australia? Maybe not there yet. But anyways, all over the Detroit area, I just put in, you go to Walmart, walmartmovie.com, walmartmovie.com, you type in your zip code, and it gives you where all the free showings are. Also, just again, number one bestseller in the United States, Al Franken's The Truth with Jokes, and the film Good Night and Good Luck, George Clooney film, about Edward R. Murrow, the famous TV journalist, taking on one of these insane Republicans that would probably be hailed by Bush and them as a great American, Joseph McCarthy, who disgraced our country. All right, let's go back to our phones, and I don't have a listing here, so welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air. I'm sorry, I don't have your name up here. Hello?
Hello?
Hello, yeah. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, yeah. Jethro, man, from Dearborn.
Hi, Jethro, you're on the air.
Ah, cool. Do you know what, man?
What?
Heard you earlier today on another station. You ended up by playing three great songs, and one of them, I don't mean to slip kick you on, but Bushko, you should call him a dirty bushwhacker. You know, come on, hit the ball, dude.
Yeah, maybe that's good. There is...
Next.
Yeah,
Hold on, I'm loaded. I wanted to call you for 20 years, back when you were my old buddy Pete.
All right, your old pal Pete.
I thought you said, oh, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Take your word.
Go ahead.
Intelligent design? That's Archer Daniel Midland, cross-pollinating wheat, man.
What? All right, go ahead.
Okay, one more.
Yeah.
And this one's serious. It gets into Athena. One word from her and we're long gone.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that was the third song you played, wasn't it?
That was a song by The Who,
yeah. Anyways, the 700 Club and the Christian Coalition, they can't be thy brother's keeper. They even go out of their way to pass legislation that's anti-thy brother's keeper.
Yeah, they do. They support it. I mean, think about Bushko. is involved right now in cutting back programs that of Medicaid that help the elderly and the disabled. They're pulling the struts out from under that. Take away food stamps for people, and they're going to give billions of dollars to their rich buddies in more tax cuts during a war when we're going deeper and deeper into debt. And another record, the trade deficit, another record trade deficit. What motivates these people? Are they just insane or?
It's greed, come on. Anyways. They can't do it, and they call themselves a Christian group. I really think they're minus 34 members. You do the math. I don't want the numeric answer. I just want yes, no, or maybe so.
Well, I'm going to have to think about that one, Jethro. Don't wait another 20 years before you call back. Thanks. I appreciate it. Whatever. All right, Elliot from Lincoln Park. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that my outlook is a little different as far as, what conservatives are saying now. I think that conservatives are really missing the point because a lot of them consider themselves to be very patriotic, you know, very, very American, you know, like diehard American and everything. But I think one of the biggest things that people are really forgetting is that this country wasn't made on following the rules.
Yep.
This country wasn't built on listening to authority. This country was built on breaking the rules. This country was built on listening to the guy next to you that's, you know, busting his hump every day, you know, working stiff, you know, working together with people that are on your level. You know, that's how this country was made. You know, it was made on the backs of slaves. It was made on the backs of the working class. And, you know, for all these conservatives to talk about, you know, oh, I'm not going to question the government, you know, they can do whatever they want, and that makes me a real American, I'm patriotic. No, that doesn't make you a real American. The people that question authority, just for the sake of questioning authority, just for the sake of making sure that those rights stay intact, because if you don't use it, you lose it.
You mentioned, the country obviously was founded by radicals and rebels and revolutionaries.
Right.
And what side were the conservatives on?
Right.
They were the royalists, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they were. In fact, as I've kind of run, I won't do it again right now. We don't have a lot of time, but I've said every major question that's confronted this country, beginning with the revolution, through slavery and women's rights and war and unions and civil rights, conservatives have been on the other side.
Because it's the side that's easiest. It's easy to sit there and say, I like things the way they are. I'd rather not expand my, you know, my thoughts or my feelings and kind of open up to new things. I just want to keep things the way they are. I'd rather keep it how somebody else set it up to be, rather than taking responsibility and saying, you know what, I think it's time for me to make decisions for myself.
Well, it's not just, I agree with you, but it's not just lazy thinking or easy thinking. It is also that when people want changes, what they're usually trying to do is challenge the power and the privilege and the wealth of the people that have it in a way that hurts other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number, and this is Sam in Canton. Sam, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Peter, nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
Long-time listener, 3 or 4-time caller over the years.
Not great.
Actually, I wanted to ask you a couple personal questions.
I'm 5'11". My favorite color is blue.
As a longtime veteran of progressive, liberal, left-wing, call it what you want, radio, what are your thoughts on the rise of popularity of Air America and other national syndicates? A, and B, have you ever been approached or considered such a venture? And C, have you ever authored a book, or am I not catching it in the local book aisle?
No, I'm too lazy for all of it, to tell you the truth. Although a few years ago, I worked for a few years on a nationally syndicated, a national radio syndicate owned by the United Auto Workers in the first part of the century here. And, it was interesting. It kind of ties in. Now, these liberal syndicates, of which that syndicate liberal talk show hosts, they judge their success by how many stations they gain, right? I mean, because now they're rather than having just a few, they're up close to 100 cities. Whereas at that time, myself and one of my favorite talk show hosts, Mike Malloy, who people can just Google and find. Remember, this is a radio station that's in competition with all other stations, so I don't want to give a lot of prominence to, even though I may not mind, I don't think my boss would like to be giving prominence to other stations that are competitors. But, well, with all that said, I forgot what the hell I was going to say. So a lot of these networks are gaining more and more stations. Mike Malloy and I, we gauged our success. Well, not our success. What could we say? I gauged the validity of what we were saying by how many stations we lost, because we would call Bush a liar. We would say that he's just giving away the country to these corporations. And these station managers in the year 2000 and 2001, they'd say, oh, these people are radicals, and they would quit our network. So we started off with about 15 stations, and I wound up with 3, and he wound up with 1. So, but it's different times now. That network kind of blazed the way for these others that are more successful now. And I think if I would have started, for instance, this year, it would have been considerably different. On the other hand, I don't know, I may be just too radical for these people. They're just kind of enthralled to the Democratic Party, and I don't know. I don't know if they'd like me. I mean, the UAW did not like my bosses at that network, did not like it that I was critical of the Democratic Party. They just wanted me to kind of be a propagandist. It's all right to be anti-Bush and anti-Republican, but they didn't want me being critical of the Democratic Party as well.
Well, if someone wanted to syndicate Night Call, would you consider it? Or?
Well, you know, I should go. There is at least one or two other stations across the country, one in California, and where the hell is the other one, that wanted to see about this. And I'm so lazy that I even forgot to ask our general manager here, who has always been extraordinarily supportive of me in every regard. Actually, everyone here is very supportive. So I should. Actually, I just wrote it down. Talk to Tom. Ask him about KRXA. Yeah. All right. The end of personal questions. Thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Let's see here. We have Mike from Novi. Mike, hi. Peter Werbe, you're on the air.
Hi, Pete. How are you?
Good. Thanks.
Good. I just to steal a line from, or to steal, you mentioned Al Franken, and one of his first books that I remember hearing about, Rush Limbaugh's A Big Fat Idiot.
Oh, yeah.
If you ever want to entertain yourself a little bit, a few calls back you were talking about how long we're going to blame the Clintons, and I don't encourage, much like your previous comment, I don't encourage people to go station jumping, but if you ever want to see something really funny, is turn Rush on and see, put the stopwatch on and see how far into the program before he mentions either Bill or Hillary's name.
It is amazing, yeah.
It's amazing how quick it's mentioned. And I really think, I truly believe this, and I say it tongue in cheek, but the Clintons should hit him up because I think he owes them a percentage. The man has become a multi-zillionaire because of them.
Yeah, but go ahead.
The other thing that kind of rolls out of that is, and it's like, I've heard this before on your show, and I just, if there's one thing I can't stand, it's the fact that any time you disagree with a neocon, all of a sudden the unpatriotic word comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And like your caller a couple calls ago said, this country wasn't founded on people that kind of toed the line.
Sure.
It was people who had radical thinking and thought outside the box, before it was even a fashionable phrase. And doggone it, I'm a very patriotic American. I'm very proud to be an American. But if I want to disagree with my president for fighting a war that I don't agree with, that's part of being an American, too.
Yeah. Remember, these conservatives, just to use one example, going back into the 1870s and 1880s, they thought that working a 12-hour day was ordained by God, at least not for them, of course, but for the average working person.
But you should also get paid $4 an hour if you're going to work 12 hours a day.
Yeah, or $4 for the day.
That's even better yet.
And 50 years before that, the conservatives thought that slavery was ordained by God. You see, that they always, until I met so many progressive religious people, I always thought that God must have been a fairly awful deity, given that he was always on the side of everything awful. But I realized, finally, that conservatives are on the side of everything awful and always have been, and they just evoke this spiritual deity in an inappropriate manner, I guess, is the nicest thing I can say.
Well, I guess I'll just continue along with many other people to do the patriotic thing and disagree with them every now and then.
There you go.
Have a great evening.
Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us. I was just looking at, any few of you might be familiar with Umberto Eco, E-C-O, and he, there was actually a movie of one of his absolutely incredible books called The Name of the Rose. Worth reading. Not a real easy read, but it's sort of action-packed and a mystery. Sort of all has a sort of a Sherlock Holmesian in reverse. I'm talking about that too much. But he was defining fascism. And think about this. Think about conservatives, and then here he is defining fascism. Not socialism, but fascism. The truth is, I could say something about that slip, but let me go ahead. Just he was talking about fascism. The truth is revealed once and only once. This is fascism. Parliamentary democracy is by definition rotten because it doesn't represent the voice of the people, which is that of the sublime leader. Doctrine outpoints reason. In other words, doctrine is to the fascists more important than reason, and science is always suspect. Critical thought is the province of degenerate intellectuals who betray the culture and subvert traditional values, according to Umberto Eco and his definition of fascism. Now it really gets to the heart of things. The national identity is provided by the nation's enemies. National identity is provided by the nation's enemies. Who we are fighting defines us. Then argument is tantamount to treason. Argument is tantamount to treason in the fascist view. And finally, perpetually at war, the state must govern with instruments of fear. Perpetually at war, the state must govern with instruments of fear. Citizens do not act. They play the supporting role of, quote, the people in the grand opera that is the state. I think maybe that was too much to read. But you can actually go to my website. This is part of a whole essay. PeterWerbe.com, PeterWerbe.com. Just go down a ways, and I think this, I can't remember the name of the essay, but it says, something about living in a fascist state. All right, a few more calls before our interviews. Here's Jay in Detroit. Jay, hi, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
Doing good, thanks.
I was calling. You just made an excellent point. But one of my concerns is you find people that are almost addicted to their party organization, be either a Democrat, you're a liberal, you're a conservative, you're a Republican, and the almost blind following of either school of thought, however you want to take it. And I find friends of mine, I'm the type of person that I live for the issues and the beliefs of what's at stake in the country or for presidents, or whatever type of election you have, but you have people that blindly will follow. God just mentioned Rush Limbaugh, but people that will just blindly follow him because they are indoctrinated or they are a part of that philosophy. And in regards to what he does, he is, it's forgiven. They'll argue the points in regards to if he says it's fascist or if it's,
Yeah, well, but you know, I don't think it's as true on the left. Like, for instance, you ask most Democrats, what about Bill Clinton? And they'll say, well, he's a good president, except, boy, was he a jerk. You know, and he shouldn't have done what he did. But if you start asking Republicans or conservatives, what mistakes have George W. Bush made? They won't come up with any, even the ones that he admits to.
It's like, the erosion of integrity and morals, regardless of what your morals are, but it's an erosion in this country where it's almost becoming.
Well,
so you take, for example, the fear tactics being used in this country, and they're very close to the fascist principle, but it is becoming blatantly obvious, even to a Republican or whatever, that this is being done to some degree, however much you want to accept it or deny it. But the thing that bothers me and concerns me in this country is the blind following of whatever group you're associated. If you're a
Well, I mean, you've made the point. I think you're right. I mean, Bob Dylan, old classic rock song, had a line, don't follow leaders, watch your parking meters. That's the best advice I can give. It kind of sums it all up. Yeah, if you relinquish your creative thinking or critical abilities to an institution or a great leader, you're in for being taken advantage of. All right, I got to get to more calls before we end, and it's almost at an end. It's Al from Inkster. Al, thanks for joining me. You're on the air.
You're telling me they're using Tom Petty to sell right-wing politics?
Yeah, I heard it on some right-wing. I won't turn back. Come on. God.
They've never been to a Tom Petty show because I've seen a couple there where he chases people around swinging his guitar at them wearing Reagan and Bush masks, usually while he's playing Don't Come Back.
Yeah, okay. All right. That's great. Yeah. I mean, wouldn't you say it's true that that among rockers and most musicians, it's probably like 100 to 1 that they're on the left?
Well, the only right winger I can think of is that that fascist sellout who plays way too loudly from Jackson.
Oh, no. He now lives in Crawford.
Oh, does he live in Crawford?
He moved to Crawford, Texas. The Motor City Madman. He's the Crawford Madman now.
That's good. He can run for He can run for governor in Texas.
All right. And unfortunately, Al, we're absolutely out of time. I got to get these commercials in before 1. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening and calling. And stay tuned for some, I think, pretty interesting interviews.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
It's 3 awesome bands, 1 red hot night, only at the 5th Avenue Ballroom in Novi. 5th Avenue Ballroom is Novi's best live music venue. See the hottest up-and-coming bands from Metro Detroit in the coolest venue. This Friday night, it's a killer triple bill at the 5th Avenue Ballroom featuring The Transfer. The Transfer, with special guests Somewhat Slack and CDMA. Come on out, party, and enjoy some of the best live local rock in the Motor City. Upstairs at 5th Avenue Ballroom in Novi this Friday night. 5th Avenue Ballroom is Novi's best place for live music and the best place to party in Metro Detroit. It's 3 awesome bands, 1 red hot night. The Transfer, along with Somewhat Slack and CDMA. Live on stage at 5th Avenue Ballroom this Friday night. 5th Avenue Ballroom on Novi Road, south of I-96 and Grand River in Novi. For more information, call 248-735-4011 or go to 5thAvenueBilliards.com.
Hi, this is John Tull, president of the Motor City Mechanics hockey team. On behalf of the Motor City Mechanics, I want to personally thank all you Riff listeners for making Motor City Mechanics hockey at the garage the coolest game in town. As we gear up for our second season, I look forward to seeing many of you back at the garage in Fraser. However, Mechanics hockey would not be successful if it were not for the strategic advertising partnership and relationship that I developed with my Riff account executive, Liz Walterhouse. Liz analyzed my advertising budget, met with Nikki from promotions, and helped me create a season-long sports marketing plan that maximized my resources to boost Mechanics ticket sales. We're looking forward to promoting season number 2. By the way, the Mechanics open up the garage on October 28th. Stay tuned for details. Riff was a huge help with the Motor City Mechanics. I am confident Riff will help you grow your business too.
Hi, I'm Liz Walterhouse from WRIF Sales. Riff doesn't just rock, Riff works for your business. Call me at 248-591-6827.
I don't want anybody to look at my ring and go, you know my girlfriend has that one also.
Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry customer, Denise Passmore.
That's Jared.
Their selection is huge. They have unmounted, mounted. They have opals. They have diamonds. They have gemstones. They have white gold, platinum. They have it all. They have the plain, the simple, the classic, the unique, everything.
This holiday, like every day, Jared has 5 times the selection of ordinary jewelry stores.
They have a really nice selection of unique pieces. Like I said, I don't want what everybody else is wearing.
Design your ring at Jared. Choose from hundreds of settings in gold or platinum. Then our experts will guide you through our vast selection of independently certified diamonds to find the one in a size and shape to suit your personal style. Begin your design today at Jared.com.
It can only be Jared.
Jared on Baldwin Road in Auburn Hills, across from 12 Oaks in Novi, in Utica at M59 and the Van Dyke Expressway, and our newest store across from Oakland Mall in Troy.
It's time to live the mortgage expert. 800-333-ROCK. 20 years in the lead. 800-333-ROCK. It's
say thank you to you, all of our clients out there. It's our 20-year anniversary, and we're excited. And right now, for folks that have credit card debt, you need to be careful. Credit card minimum payments are going to be doubling soon. So you want to consolidate that debt, and the mortgage experts can help you right now. If you call today, a mortgage expert can help you consolidate that credit card debt, reduce your payments now.
It's time to live.
Company Eagle Housing Lender.
In this fast-paced world, everything is streamlined. From cell phones the size of credit cards to computers that fit in your back pocket. To keep up with you, city slickers, KFC is introducing the new Fish Snacker, a tasty, handheld, freshly prepared fish sandwich served up on Fridays only for those on-the-go types. And to make it even more user-friendly, they're just 99 cents. And for those of us who appreciate the charm of rotary phones and long-playing albums, Kentucky Fried Chicken has a deal for us, too. Pull up a chair and enjoy a hearty country fried steak meal, including country fried steak with white pepper gravy, mashed potatoes, coleslaw, and a biscuit, all for just $1.99. A deal so good it can only be offered on Tuesdays. Whether you're a city slicker on the go or a down-home country type, KFC has a deal that's made for you. Get a delicious fish snacker for just 99 cents every Friday and a hearty country fried steak meal for just $1.99 every Tuesday. KFC, Chicken Capital USA. Only at participating KFC locations. Tax exempt.
Another WRIF concert.
Prince presents Bon Jovi, the Have a Nice Day Tour. Part of the Miller Lite Concert Series. Live.
Have a nice day.
Overwhelming demand. A second and final show at it. This Saturday night. Palace of Auburn Hill. A hit music and legendary performance that has thrilled millions.
It's my life,
it's now or never. Bon Jovi, live in concert. By Overwhelming Demand, a second and final show at it this Saturday night at the Palace of Auburn Hill. More info at BonJovi.com. Reserve seat tickets on sale now at PalaceNet.com. The Palace box office. All Ticketmasters by phone 248-645-6666 or AEGLive.com. Part of the Miller Lite Concert Series. The new CD, Have a Nice Day, in stores now. Bon Jovi. Presented by Sprint and AEG Live.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Anybody who's been reading the papers, watching television, listening to the radio, you're aware suddenly of the rise to prominence of the president of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez. He's been there for quite a while, and he sort of rises and falls in terms of the prominence in the American media. And he's portrayed often as the arch enemy of George W. Bush, if not even in a way, maybe the United States, but mostly it's personal animosity between Bush and Chavez, two presidents. And if you ever read particularly, even papers like the New York Times, they'll usually have an adjective in front of Hugo Chavez's name, something like mercurial or populist or leftist. And I even saw it today in the New York Times in an editorial. He was referred to as a loudmouth opportunist. So who is this man, and what does his policies portend for the United States? Joining me is Irish Times writer Michael McCaughan. Now, Michael, I didn't say that right, did I?
It wasn't a bad stab at it. McCaughan.
McCaughan. Yeah, there you go. All right. For a Midwesterner, I did okay. His book is called The Battle of Venezuela, and it's published by our friends at Seven Stories Press. And the Battle of Venezuela, what are we looking at here, Michael? What battle are we speaking of?
Well, what we're really speaking about is the battle of Hugo Chavez to stay in office despite sabotage, coup, and other forms of extreme opposition that falls way beyond the spectrum of what is legitimate in a democratic society where Hugo Chavez has won his mandate six times in the past 7 years.
Well, he's the other phrase I forgot. One of the most important one that they use is strongman. And oftentimes I've seen it, mercurial strongman. In other words, someone that rises in a period of turmoil, seizes power usually, and functions pretty much like a dictator. Tell us some about Hugo Chavez and how he came to be the president of Venezuela and its legitimacy. Because there is always the suggestion, as George Bush said the other day, that there are two routes. One is democracy, and then there's the other way back to the past, making the not-so-subtle implication that Chavez and Venezuela were going the opposite way.
Well, it's quite amusing to hear George W. Bush talk about the risk of returning to what he calls an authoritarian past of dictators and tyrants in Latin America, given that it was the United States that supported, installed, and maintained in power illegitimately and against the wishes of the majority of the peoples throughout Latin America, whether it was the Somoza dynasty, whether it was Papa Doc and Baby Doc, whether it was Batista, whether it was Stroessner in Paraguay, etc., etc. The length and breadth of Latin America, the United States has intervened to install puppet regimes that have one important condition, and that is that they are favorable to U.S. investments overseas in Latin America. So that you really have to look carefully at the language surrounding that George W. Bush and the rest of them use in relation to Hugo Chavez, because it means almost exactly the opposite of what they claim it means.
Now, they would probably say that that is history, and that since the 1980s that we've been moving in the direction of democracy. I mean, I agree with that history. The United States has, what, intervened militarily in Latin America with no legitimate basis other than securing economic interests, as you're saying, I believe it was 100 times in the 20th century.
That's right. Well, it's very important, again, to look at the 1980s and 90s and what sort of democracies have been in power. They are very much the democracies that are accepted by the United States. And if people step outside that narrow spectrum of acceptable democracy, they're quickly threatened with sanctions and so on. So, for example, in Bolivia, where you have a very unstable situation and where the majority, the dispossessed, really feel it's now their time to take power. When Evo Morales takes the legitimate route and competes for the presidency, what happens in the last week of the election? You have the United States saying it's going to cut off all aid if Morales is elected by the people. So even when you participate and stick by the rules that the US have laid down, even when you accept that, in a sense, there's a kind of a corporate media bias and a campaign finance bias that will always favor the establishment candidate, if you surprise that system, then you will not be accepted by the United States, and the United States will always put you on probation until such time as you fall in line with their goals and policies in the region. Hugo Chavez is a very interesting case because, again, he came to power having tried to win a coup in 1992 and failed. And what happened there was he had his minute on television when the government thought that they were bringing it to a speedy resolution by allowing Chavez to call on his forces to surrender. But Chavez, being this charismatic, dynamic personality, used his 90 seconds to invigorate the country, to make himself a household name, and to, in a sense, ignite the sort of sense of possibility and hope that an alternative political project could bring to Venezuela. So that within 6 years, he was strolling into power through democratic means, in a popular vote. But of course that wasn't enough for the opposition, and they immediately plotted how to overthrow him before seeing whether or not he was going to be any good. Because by the time the coup attempt happened in 2002, all Chavez had done was lay down the groundwork and the pillars for an alternative economic and political system. The constitution, the new laws regarding agrarian reform and oil ownership, etc., etc., the famous 49 laws. Nothing had actually happened, really. No, it was barely getting off its knees when the coup happened, because the elite knew that the game might be up, that Chavez really wasn't just speaking hot air the way candidates do on the campaign trail, that he really meant to carry out the project he promised to carry out.
Michael McCaughan, in your book, The Battle of Venezuela, do you talk much about the middle class and elite opposition? Because I just saw a documentary made by some Irish filmmakers for the BBC called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, And it didn't look like he was doing anything. The middle class was in the street saying he's a communist, and it didn't look like he was sending them off to camps or anything. They looked like they were in their rich houses, and it didn't look like much had changed for them.
Well, this is it. The elite, the wealthy elite, which sort of means the top 5, 10, 15% in each Latin American country, has what could only be described as zero tolerance for any form of wealth redistribution. In other words, when they're called on, you know, everyone agrees that wealth is unequally distributed, but when it comes to trying to solve that, what they do is they believe in charity, they believe in dinners, they believe in fundraising, they believe in foundations where you toss a few coins at the poor and you begin soup, you have soup kitchens through the church for the poor, and that's it. But when you talk about overhauling the structures of inequality, that's when they sit up and take notice. And that's when the very slightest move in that direction is met with violent and aggressive hostility.
Tell us, I didn't let you tell the story because I wanted you to do it on the air. This documentary about the coup in 2002, you said you had at least a slight connection to it.
That's right. A couple of friends of mine made it, Kim Barkley and Dunnock O'Brien. And what happened was they went over, they thought that they heard about Chavez and thought the project was quite interesting, but they really knew very little about Venezuela. And they went and they ended up spending 4 or 5 months playing billiards in the Parque del Este, one of the famous parks, because they couldn't get any access to Hugo Chavez. Eventually they got 15 minutes to explain their idea to him, and he was quite impressed with their proposal. And so, in a sense, he took them on board and began to give them some access. By the time the coup happened, April 2002, he had come in some way to trust them and had spent a lot of time talking to them. They'd done a lot of interviews. In fact, they were about to wrap it up when they found themselves in the palace on the evening of the coup with the cameras rolling. And so what we see is very dramatic footage of literally a coup as it's happening, a coup very much engineered by the media and disaffected generals of the army who weren't happy with this new idea that the army might be out in the streets building hospitals and repairing roads rather than suppressing dissidents and alleged communists. So that in that process, we see a very interesting sense of Chavez. What we see is somebody who's very calm under pressure, who does not call for a bloody uprising and retaliation against this coup, which is obviously the work of a minority of people. He deliberately goes quietly into the hands of these generals rather than unleash bloodshed in the country. And amazingly, it's turned around by a combination of sort of mid-ranking army people who refuse to accept the coup plotters and the people coming down from the hillsides, the poor hillsides, who've been given a taste of hope. They haven't been given any major changes in their life yet. This is very early days. None of the missions have begun. None of the social welfare programs are in place. But the mere hope, the mere hint, the mere spark of change, the possibilities that could happen, brings them out against in a very dangerous situation, because you also see that the anti-Chavez Metropolitan Police are beginning to beat people up. They're detaining people. They're kicking in doors. There's a witch hunt beginning, and yet you have ordinary people coming down and risking their lives to get Chavez back because they know somehow he's their man, even though they haven't seen the possibilities of his program in action yet.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary documentary, and apparently it's not even commercially available. I was sent, if you will, kind of a bootleg copy by a listener, and we hear about coups all the time. To see this in action, to see the leaders of the business community seize the power of the state and have the attorney general appointed by no one start saying, we declare the National Assembly dissolved, the Supreme Court dissolved. And I was wondering, how would that feel if this was the United States and someone was dissolving Congress, dissolving the court system and what have you? But tell us more. I don't want to spend too much time on this documentary that nobody can get to see. What is accessible is the Battle of Venezuela. We're talking with Irish Times writer Michael McCaughan, and it's published by Seven Stories Press. You go to sevenstories.com, and I'll have a link on my site as well. What we keep hearing about Bolivarian socialism, or what? I mean, people have gotten really suspicious of socialism and people with brand new programs to equalize wealth that turned out badly in a lot of places. What's different here?
I think what's different here is that there is no dogmatic set of rules being followed by Hugo Chavez. He's very much moving at the pace of the possible within his own budgets and border, so that you have a situation where he looks back to Simon Bolivar, who is in a sense a homegrown socialist, a homegrown figure from the independence movement, who believed in the value of education, who believed that there should be checks and balances in any system of government, and who also, and this is significant, wanted to unite the region to make it in some sense a power bloc that could face down the other power blocs in the world. So that's what Hugo Chavez is looking at in broad brushstrokes. But in a sense, he's very much a man of the moment who's constantly analyzing and assessing just how far he can go. And I think what you saw at the summit this weekend was a man emerging. Almost it was like a graduation ceremony for Hugo Chavez and this new generation of progressive leaders who have the confidence of the popular vote, combined with the vision of sort of stimulating domestic development and not simply bowing to the Washington consensus. So in a sense, Chavez really belongs in that mold. It's flexible. It sometimes calls it socialism for the 21st century. So it's always qualified. It's not simply socialism under some sort of Marxist dogma or some sort of old set of rules. He said himself, this isn't an era for proletarian revolution. It's not going to happen. But he also adds, if you tell me that means we can't change anything in this country, that's where we part ways. There are always ways to advance the cause of the poor, even if it's only centimeter by centimeter.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us some. I mean, in a democratic country, which Venezuela is, and as you indicate in your book, The Battle of Venezuela, there's been numerous elections that Chavez has won. He's won referendums. His popularity, from everything I understand, is up around 70%. But the emphasis on one man, so that's why what you'll see in the papers in this country or in the media, they refer to him as a strong man, which is almost code word for dictator.
That's right. And I think there's two things we have to look at here. One is this prevailing notion of democracy. Just what do we mean by democracy in Latin America? Over the past while, when military dictatorships handed over power to constitutional rule, they didn't do it in a way of surrender. They did it in a way of arrogance, whereby they said, as long as you follow these rules, and in the case of Pinochet, the rules were enshrined in the Constitution. The notion of a free market system was in the Constitution and could not be altered by the government of the day. You had a system whereby democracy was a very tight, very much a straitjacket, in which only a certain amount of leverage was allowed to the individual president of the day. That kind of reached its climax in Mexico, where you had a nominal, what they call the perfect dictatorship, which is that you have one ideology and one party, which changes power every 6 years and introduces another individual to the presidential throne. But there's no way anything's going to change in the system, so that for 70 years you had effectively a dictatorship, but nominally a democracy. So I think we have to be very careful in sort of looking at notions of democracy and what it really means in practice for societies and for the citizen's ability to influence his or her public affairs in the country they live in.
Sure.
In the case of Hugo Chavez, I think he has this kind of larger-than-life personality. He talks endlessly. He has the vision. He mobilizes people. It's amazing to be around him. People really feel like he is their, you meet grandmothers who really feel like their son is in power. And you meet people who simply cry in his presence. It's very much a combination of the messiah figure and the politician. And that adds up to a strong man. I mean, that does add up to the traditional Latin American caudillo, which is the word for the leader. Yeah. But that's not necessarily a Pinochet. In fact, Pinochet is the opposite. When have we ever heard of him having any charisma or any common touch?
Yeah.
He was completely removed with his dark glasses and his military outfits, completely kept away from the people. So the Hugo Chavez represents a completely different phenomenon who has the necessary badge of democratic legitimacy.
My guest is Michael McCaughan. He is the author of The Battle of Venezuela, and it's published by Seven Stories Press. You're listening to The Peter Werby Show. I'm an advocate, as most of us are, of democracy wherever possible. And after having visited Cuba earlier this year, it occurred to me, and also having visited Mexico, I was thinking, if I was particularly poor, but maybe even a little higher than poor, would I rather be in capitalist, democratic Mexico or commie police state Cuba? I mean, in other words, in Cuba, it's peaceful, there's no violence, you have the health care. There's problems, I think, with how the government often reacts to critics, but damn, I mean, Mexico is rapidly turning into a hellhole.
I totally agree, and I think it's one of the ways. It's a good metaphor for looking at all of Latin American society, and it's something I often talk to people about when they say, "Well, you know, what's it like to live in Cuba versus what's it like to live in Peru?" If I was poor, and I was Peruvian or Colombian, I think I would be much better off, in a sense, in Cuba, where there is this social cohesion, this coherence, this network. If I was rich, I wouldn't want to be in Cuba. I think I'd be pretty happy in Colombia or Venezuela or Argentina, where I could simply lock myself away from the rabble, spend my money, go off to Miami for my shopping trips, and live happily ever after, knowing that the security forces would, in some way, certainly in Colombia and Chile, would safeguard my wealth, and if it came to the crunch, would be prepared to open fire on the protesters.
Michael McCaughan, I'm actually saving my pennies right now, thinking about, I'm going to have to save more than that for airfare to go to Caracas. I believe it's the end of January, the beginning of February, for what's called the World Social Forum. And what will I find? I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to Detroit, but I know you've been to a lot of other American big cities. What are the contrasts there? I was I'll just leave it at that. What does one find? Is it dangerous? Is it friendly? Is it what would it be like when you've been there?
I've spent quite a lot of time in Caracas, and I've had the interesting experience of living both in a working class neighborhood, the Barrio San Jose, and in one of these upmarket neighborhoods, Altamira, which is kind of home to the more rabid elements of the opposition. And the contrast could not be sharper, because on the one hand, in this sort of upmarket area, you have security guards, you've got endless locks and keys and security codes to get into the lift. The whole thing is like a fortress. You feel like you're living in a fortress, and so on. And at the other end of the scale, then you've got this more community centered thing, whereby this obviously people are, you know, almost on top of each other in a sense. But what they do have in common is this sense of insecurity, and it's one of those things that it's one of the great imponderables, in that you cannot simply decree it away and you cannot bludgeon it away, but you have this element of lawlessness which arrives with the night. And in the neighborhood I was staying in, this is the poor neighborhood, by 9 o'clock, if you weren't in your house, you watched your step as you were getting out of a taxi, just a few steps to get to your house. And I'm not exaggerating. I'm somebody who believes you have to take a chance and walk freely in the streets of the great capitals, Bogota, Buenos Aires, wherever you are. And I've always done that. But I had a pretty nasty experience in Caracas, where I was mugged by 7 youths.
Wow.
And almost killed.
Well, that can happen in Detroit or Chicago or Los Angeles or New York, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, even as it happened, it was one of those, I had a strange experience where, instead of seeing my own life flashing before me, I actually felt like I was seeing the life of the 7 people jumping me flashing before me. Hmm. And it was pretty miserable, and it was pretty grim. And I completely, in a sense, understood that this was it for them. This was a foolish foreigner who was walking after dark, who wandered into the wrong neighborhood, looking very vulnerable. They weren't trying to kill me. They were just trying to subdue me and get whatever I had, which wasn't much, I might add. And it was all over in a matter of seconds. And in fact, the most dangerous aspect was a policeman came running with his gun unholstered and asked me sort of where they went, as if he was going to start shooting at the air, which God knows what would have happened then. So Caracas has the same urban sort of tentativeness that you find in Sao Paulo. And you find in Rio, because you have this very, very sort of seething living arrangement where you literally have hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people living in very difficult conditions, high unemployment, high underemployment, And yet they're almost leaning, they're looking at the wealth, this magnificent wealth is staring them in the face and almost spitting at them with contempt. So that all adds up to a very heady brew. And the projects are obviously taking a grip in those neighborhoods. But, you know, I remember my next door neighbor in this poor neighborhood was a woman who was involved in the literacy crusade. She was going off as a volunteer and her son was staying behind. And he seemed to be involved in drugs. And she could not motivate him. How do you motivate that person, this teenager, who's never had anything, and who doesn't have the same sense of passion and commitment to a cause that she does, because maybe she's raised kids, and she's seen all these corrupt political parties come and go, and so she sees Chavez, and is moved by him. But this sort of hardened teenager who feels he's got no future. How do you bring him into the system? How do you bring him into the process? I think that's the real challenge in the years ahead.
Yeah, I was thinking, too, I know that it's sad, I didn't do it too much, but they said you could walk in the downtown streets of Havana after midnight by yourself and without fear, whereas, as I said, it was extraordinarily peaceful there. The contradictions, though, of poverty and wealth don't exist in Cuba, even though it has other problems. But, you mentioned about the sense of insecurity and anxiety. It sounds like everyone there, I mean, this is a society that's in great turmoil in many ways. So if you have both the poor and the wealthy expressing this social anxiety, it's kind of a dangerous mix.
It is. That's very true. And what you also have is that you've got, in a sense, a great gamble, because the Chavez experiment could, as my mother used to say, end in tears when it goes too far, or when it doesn't go far enough, or when he's thrown out of power. So there's a huge volume of people who are trusting in this experiment, and they're, in a sense, gambling their future on it, even though it's got an uncertain outcome. But there are many, and I would call them, you know, working class people, people of very poor means, very low means, who the little they have, they're afraid they'll lose. And they almost have the same anxiety as the very rich, because they feel like, well, you know, if Bush hates them, if the powerful hate them, then surely this is just not going to last. Well, how can we believe in it? So there is that element of sort of psychological warfare that's going on. And that, of course, is where the media comes into its own. You mm-hmm. have the corporate media run by Gustavo Cisneros, the great Cuban Miami, who is almost like a one-man free trade area of the Americas. He owns sort of mobile phone franchises. He owns restaurants. He owns golf clubs. He owns, you know, multimillionaire. And he is pumping out what can only be described as a kind of a slow feed, a poison feed of anti-Chavez hysteria. It's not information propaganda. Every night. And so, all again, these people who live in these neighborhoods, they have the little television in the corner, they have the free channel, this corporate channel with the soap operas, and in addition to the soap operas, they get their daily dose of fear and hysteria.
Well, we're gonna actually have to take the rest of it to your book, because we're completely out of time with Michael McCaughan. I've probably mispronounced his name about seven times. Let me spell it for you. It's Michael McCaughan. The book is The Battle of Venezuela. You can go to 7stories.com and find out more about it. Go to your local independent bookstore. Look on my website as well, peterwerby.com. Thanks for joining me on The Peter Werby Show.
Thank you very much.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
I can do this. I'm smarter than he is. If it weren't for me, he'd still be putting his shoes on the wrong feet.
Hey, Brad. What's going on, Mom?
Don't lecture. Don't lecture. Don't lecture.
Oh, nothing. You sure about that?
Oh, he suspects something. He's on to me. He's on to me.
Well, actually,
Be open. The website said be open.
I was wondering if we could talk about drinking.
Drinking? Drinking what?
I did it. I actually did it. I even phrased it as a question, just like the website said. Yes, Mom of the Year, right here.
Talking with your child about underage drinking isn't as hard as you might think. In fact, the hard part? It's in your head. For a free parent guide on talking to your kids about underage drinking, visit FamilyTalkOnline.com or call 1-800-359-TALK. Responsibility matters. Anheuser-Busch.
Here's the question. What are you worth? I mean, what are you worth in the job market? What skills and knowledge do you possess that create value for a company? Do you have what it takes for employers to pay you $65,000 a year on average? Do you have what it takes to start right out of school making $30,000 or $40,000 a year? Have you positioned yourself in the fastest growing industry rated by the United States federal government? Good questions. Tough answers. If you're stuck making less than $45,000 a year with no way to increase your income, it's time to visit computertraining.com. Log on to their website at www.computertraining.com and find out why their graduates are living their dreams by making an investment in themselves for a better tomorrow today. Please note up front that not everyone is qualified. You'll need to demonstrate that you have solid computer skills and a sincere desire to succeed in order to be accepted into their new Microsoft XP program. To learn more, visit www.computertraining.com and take the online entrance challenge. Again, that's computertraining.com, helping you build a better tomorrow today. Computertraining.com does not guarantee job placement or job salary levels. Pay scales can be dramatically affected by employer size, industry, employee credentials, years of experience, and other factors.
Mortgage myth number 42. You can't get a loan to contract and build your own home. Wrong.
Construction lending is an integral part of the Nolan Mortgage mission. Nolan Mortgage has been providing construction loans across the state since 1998. Their program provides the flexibility you need to tackle your home project without compromising your dreams. Do you want to utilize structural panels, insulated concrete forms, a wooden basement, or steel framing? Nolan Mortgage can help. Maybe you want to build a log cabin. Nolan Mortgage can help. Considering a modular home. You guessed it, Nolan Mortgage can help. They can even finance your major renovation project. If you're considering building your own home or renovating your existing home, don't break ground until you break out the phone and call Nolan Mortgage at 888-665-2630. Nolan Mortgage is a local company serving all of Michigan. Get started on that new home. Call today, 888-665-2630.
Divorce, custody, support. Three words that tell a man you have a serious problem. You can try to solve your problem by ignoring it, by calling some new lawyers who claim to suddenly be into men's rights, or by choosing a lawyer with the flip of a coin. Or you can tackle your problem with the experienced professionals at ADAM, the American Divorce Association for Men. You can call ADAM at 248-356-ADAM, and they'll answer your questions by phone at no charge. ADAM has been successfully representing white-collar professionals, business owners, doctors, blue-collar workers, and men just like you for over a decade. With ADAM, you get the advantages of a large law firm, but receive the attention and dedication of one experienced attorney who will handle your case from beginning to end. Because of its many years of experience, ADAM can design a strategy to help you protect your home, your property, your children, and your future. And remember, while others may claim to be the so-called new answer in men's rights, ADAM, through dedication, knowledge, and experience, keeps proving they're the right answer when it comes to protecting men in divorce. Call ADAM today at 248-356-ADAM. That's 248-356-ADAM.
The party just doesn't stop at Leopard's Lounge and Broil, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. There's always something happening at Leopard's Lounge. Every Monday is amateur night. Come watch the hottest amateurs around as they compete for cash prizes. Wednesdays, check out the Leopard's Lounge girls as they strut their stuff to the best live music out there. And every Thursday night, make sure you stop in for free pizza. And of course, join Mark Fellhauer from the Drew and Mike Show this and every Tuesday night for Riff Night at Leopard's Lounge and Broil. Mark will be there to make sure you and your buddies always have a great time and leave with lots of cool free stuff. Guys, remember, at Leopard's Lounge, you never pay a cover charge, ever. They even have free parking and, of course, the most beautiful women in the world. Leopard's Lounge and Broil in Windsor, just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge and Broil, where the party never stops. Transportation provided by Limousine Express.
Real players come to MGM Grand to play. Are you ready to get lucky?
Well, it's MGM.
Lucky Table Tuesdays has been extended due to enormous success. Now get lucky until November 22nd. Just play your favorite table games every Tuesday from noon till midnight. And if your table is randomly selected, everyone playing on it will win guaranteed cash, up to $250. With more cash and more winners every Tuesday, getting lucky is easier than you think. Come get your game on during Lucky Table Tuesdays, only at MGM Grand. Lucky Table Tuesdays is back, and so is your chance to score. Instant bonus cash with more winners than ever before. See Players Club for details. MGM Grand Detroit Casino.
We're back
with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Boy, I started getting a little touch of the flu last week and thought, oh, no, avian flu. So now we don't have to be worried about terrorism. It's bird flu. And we saw George Bush on television take charge. He hasn't done real well with the war and with relief in the Gulf, but maybe he's going to do all right with this, or will he? I'd like to welcome Robert Weissman. Robert Weissman is director of Essential Action and also edits Multinational Monitor magazine. We're talking to him in Washington, D.C. Robert Weissman, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks for having me on.
Even though these things, they come and go so quickly, we thought, boy, this was going to be, you know, the mega big issue item, and weeks gone by and already it's kind of, the bird flu's kind of faded to the margins. Is this something we should really be concerned about?
Yeah, this is not just hysteria that was drummed up for the purpose of diverting attention from the war or from the Libby scandal or any other problems of the Bush administration. This is a legitimate public health threat. The deal is, if there is an avian flu pandemic, the likelihood is that it will spread very quickly to the entire globe and have really devastating consequences unless the United States and the world prepare properly. We don't know if it will in fact happen, but it is a real risk, and not one that's, you know, like anything might happen in the world. It's not like a meteor might hit your house tomorrow. This is a serious risk, and appropriate public policy will be to plan for it, taking into account how serious it will be if it does come to pass.
You know, I was thinking of SARS, because I'm so skeptical, like so many people. But when someone like yourself says, well, we ought to be concerned, and so many other people as well, a concern is there. Now, Bush announced that they're going to expand the U.S. stockpile of antivirals. So that's good news, right?
Well, some of what Bush announced in his recent policy statement on avian flu was good. The commitment to expand the stockpile of antivirals is a good idea. It's supported, I think, by most public health experts who are focusing on this. The problem is that the president's announcement was a day late and a dollar short, or actually several years late, and maybe billions of dollars short, unless the administration is willing to override the monopoly patent protection that Roche, the manufacturer of Tamiflu, the main antiviral that people are talking about, holds. The Roaches, not only is there a price concern about Roche charging too much for the drug, but they actually are unable to manufacture a sufficient quantity to meet the global demand for the product. And because the United States waited so long to place its order, it's actually pretty far down the line, and there's no expectation that Roche will be able to make the drug and supply it for the U.S. stockpile until 2007. So if we're lucky, that'll work out. But we don't know if we're going to be lucky, and the whole idea of stockpiling is to undertake a precautionary measure to be prepared in advance of what might happen, and by choosing not to override Roche's patent, the U.S. government, the Bush administration, is saying, well, we're willing to take a risk for a couple years so we can maintain their patent monopoly.
Now, most of us now, particularly now, are familiar with the flu pandemic of 1918 that killed, you hear lots of different figures, but somewhere in the tens of millions, and yet only 500,000, I mean, that's quite a chunk, but 500,000 of that 18 to 30 million were in the United States. And somewhere along the line, I remember hearing that one of the reasons that it hit this country less than, for instance, European countries and Asian countries, that Europe particularly had just experienced a war, and that levels of the immune systems were pretty low. This is not the bubonic plague. It's not going to kill a third of our population, or will it?
Well, no one knows exactly what it'll be, of course, because the concern is that the virus, which is now spreading rapidly among bird populations around the world, will mutate in such a way so that not only can it transfer from birds to humans, as it has done in a few dozen cases, but transfer from human to human. And if that happens, then we will be in a situation of a pandemic. We don't yet know what that virus looks like, so we can't say for sure what the toll will be in death and health problems. The estimates from the Center for Disease Control are that a medium-level pandemic for the United States would cost between 89,000 and a little bit over 200,000 deaths. Worldwide, the totals would be much higher. The World Health Organization estimates on the order of maybe 7 million, and there have been some numbers that go up to over 100 million worldwide deaths as possibilities, as a possibility if the pandemic does take hold.
Mm-hmm. And that could, though, be determined to determined by what I was saying about one's level of health. And a lot of Americans are in good health. A lot of Americans aren't because of the inability of full health care. Let's take that as a starting point. Robert Weissman, tell me about the Tamiflu and Roche. All over the internet, we hear Gilead and Donald Rumsfeld, the Secretary of War, as they used to call him back when the Constitution was formed, and saying that he will stand to personally profit. Is that true, and is it warranted?
Well, the story is this: the patent on Tamiflu, the key patents, are held by Gilead, which is a relatively small pharmaceutical company based in San Francisco. Gilead has licensed the rights to manufacture and sell Tamiflu to Roche, a Swiss-based company which is much larger. Donald Rumsfeld does, in fact, hold a significant portion of Gilead stock. I think it's understandable why there's a lot of conspiracy theories floating around about Rumsfeld, given how much harm he's done around the world, but I'm afraid that this one may be a little bit off base. It's not clear that Gilead has the same interests as Roche. If there was an override of Roche's patent, Gilead would actually receive royalties from the generic manufacturers who would start producing in competition with Roche. So it may be, in fact, that Gilead's interests are supportive of an override of the patent and letting generic competition take place. That is contrary to Roche's interest, which is to maintain its monopoly control over the supply. So Rumsfeld's interest, to the extent that he's involved in this matter, is his personal investment interest is with Gilead, and it turns out that Gilead's interest may not be so contrary to the public health just because of the unique way that the product has been licensed to another firm that's managing it in a way that's not been to Gilead's satisfaction.
Well, let's revisit what you were saying earlier about Roche's unwillingness to bend the patent rules or to make an exception here. What's at stake? I mean, what's their fear? I mean, wouldn't they still be able to profit if it was being made generically by other firms?
Well, I think there's two things at stake for Roche. One is if other firms are producing the drug, that will be at the expense of sales that Roche itself might have made. Second, if other firms start producing the drug, they're likely to be able to make it and sell it at prices that are much cheaper than Roche is now charging. So that will put price pressure on Roche to lower the price that it's been charging in either individual consumers or government buyers. And a third concern, in some ways really the central one, both for Roche and for the entire brand name pharmaceutical industry, for all of Big Pharma and for all of Big Pharma's apologists, including those, say, on the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal, is an obsession with upholding monopoly patent rights and ensuring that there are no restrictions on monopoly patent rights, even if the public health is at stake. So for them, this is important not only for the specific case, and it's very important for Roche as a specific case, but also as a matter of setting precedent for how the government of the United States or other governments, for that matter, treat patents and whether they're willing to recognize patents as what they are, socially created property that involves a balance between the rights of the patent holder and the public interest in getting access to the product, or whether they venerate patents above all other concerns and just say, well, the patent is there and there's nothing we can do about it. That's the view that the brand name pharmaceutical industry would like to see take hold, and they're worried that this case is going to undermine their ability to defend that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Robert Weissman is my guest. He's the director of Essential Action and also edits Multinational Monitor magazine. We'll give you some ways to contact both the magazine and the group. In fact, the group is easy, essential.org. It would seem that when you talked about venerating these patent rules, well, defense of private property certainly is at the core of this system. And to some extent, Roche is correct. I mean, I don't think it works out real well for the world's population. But once you start allowing an erosion of what they see as property rights and things either they developed or they've paid a fee for other people to develop, they could see their whole, as you, the word you use, the whole monopoly start to go down the drain. So this would be, I can't think of another word other than this cliched phrase, but a sea change, actually.
Well, there are other instances. There are actually lots of instances where patent rights are restricted. But the goal of the, including those that are owned or controlled by the big pharmaceutical companies, but their goal is always to make it seem the opposite, that the patent right is almost a fact of nature and that to touch it in any way would devastate the research and development system, all incentives for R&D, or maybe even undermine the workings of the global economy as we know it. I think that the impact of doing it would actually be much more modest. R&D would continue. The global economy would continue to work just pretty much the way it does, for better and worse. But there'd be some restriction on the ability of the big companies to use patent rights to control access to medicines. And in this case, again, it's really stark because what we're talking about is not just the price of the medicines, but simply the availability. Roche is not able to make enough of the product to satisfy the global demand, and it's a global demand that may involve matters of life and death.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's a question really based in studied naivete, and that is, if there is a limited supply and a large demand, who's going to get it? I mean, there was actually, I saw some, they were saying care providers, first responders, doctors and nurses, people like that. That's kind of understandable, but that's probably at best in the hundreds of thousands. So if you have a worldwide pandemic that maybe a couple billion people need it and you have 100 million doses, there's going to be a scramble.
That's right. Well, there's a couple parts to the answer. The supply that Roche is making now is going to go to those parties that have ordered it. So when the government's trying to stockpile, the governments that have placed orders earlier are going to get their supply sooner than governments that have placed the orders later, like the United States. And there are other governments in poor countries where the product is at least as needed and arguably more needed because the pandemic is likely to outbreak there, that don't have the money to invest in a stockpile and haven't ordered anything, and they're not going to get any drugs except for perhaps some small number that the World Health Organization is able to allocate in areas where the pandemic outbreaks. The exception to this may be for governments that choose to override Roche's patent and produce the drug domestically or import from other generic competitors, or who threaten to do so, they're therefore able to work out arrangements with Roche on a voluntary basis to let others produce the drug. Vietnam, for example, has just worked out an agreement today or yesterday with Roche that will enable them to manufacture the drug locally. And they are able to work out that agreement only because of the threat that if there is no voluntary agreement from Roche, they're going to not sit back and suffer. They're going to actually go ahead and override the patent. So given that choice, Roche was willing to make a deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
Within the United States, the first question is there going to be a supply of the drug available at all? There won't be a government supply of the drug available. There will be whatever is normally available in drugstores, and private parties are likely to try to create their own stockpiles in the absence of certainty that there'll be protection from the government. The president's proposal would have the stockpile built up to levels lower than many public health experts have recommended. And as you say, it would be initially allocated to health providers to enable them to work with people who are sick, and then probably focus geographically to try to constrain the epidemic from sweeping across the country. And whether the numbers in the Bush plan are sufficient or not is, I think, something about which there can be some debate, although they're not terribly low.
Mm-hmm. You may be aware that Peter Stoett, a professor of international relations at Concordia University, wrote in the Toronto Star, actually most of what he's saying is in the title, Avoiding Global Bio-Apartheid. And that's what I was thinking, too. So, I mean, obviously, the people with the most money are going to get it.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And it's a double problem because even if you were just selfishly looking at it from the viewpoint of the United States, the part of the reason to distribute the antivirals in a quick and effective fashion would be to try to target the area where a pandemic breaks out and help to contain it. And if countries don't have a stockpile, they're not going to be able to do that.
Now, we're not talking about a vaccine. We are talking about Tamiflu, right, that would reduce the symptoms.
That's correct.
Now, part of the with the Internet, I mean, it is a blessing in that you have such quick access to information. And on the other hand, the curse is that you're inundated with so many different versions of reality. And somewhere along the line, I read someone saying that Tamiflu is not particularly effective and could lead to the development of a sort of a Tamiflu-resistant strain. So do we want to be moving towards mass Tamiflu?
Well, I think that Tamiflu, for the standard flu, is viewed as not a very good product. What it tends to do is reduce the period that a person has the flu for about a day or a day and a half. So the compared to getting a flu vaccine, it's really not a very effective intervention. On the other hand, with an avian flu, where the symptoms may lead you to die, relieving the severity of the symptoms may be much more important than just getting you out of a couple days of coughing and sniffling. And it's not for sure that it'll work. Again, it's unknown because we don't really know what form the virus might take if it becomes transmissible between humans. But the general view seems to be that it's like among public health people is that it's likely to be effective, and it seems to be the best treatment that we have available now.
You know, Robert Weissman, I know in your work you're committed to the extension of democracy as much as possible to live out the vision of what the society's supposed to be about. But increasingly, people feel powerless through the economy, through wars being waged, and now this. I don't know. If you ask me, I wouldn't know what to say, and I don't know if it's fair to ask you, but what the hell do we do? I mean, is there, in this specific instance of what we're talking about, is there any way that an aroused public can do anything?
Well, I think the answer is yes, and that this isn't totally a bad story, and the world has been lucky so far with the pandemic not breaking out, and hopefully it never will, and hopefully if it does happen, it will take place far enough down the road that despite the long delays in preparedness, we will have prepared by the time it hits. But I think one thing we've seen is that there have been actually a relatively small number of public health experts who've been sounding the alarm about this thing, and they managed to get their message through. And in a way that's suddenly starting to jar the planet to take the disease seriously. There have been other small interventions that have really transformed the way the debate's gone. One part of the story that we haven't discussed is that for many years now, Roche has said that no one else could possibly make this product, because it was so complicated to make and involved even explosive manufacturing practices. Well, a few weeks ago, an Indian company, an Indian generic company, Cipla, said, we're able to manufacture this. And suddenly, it seemed not so complicated to make the drug that Roche had said was impossible for anybody else to make. Many other generic suppliers started looking at it more carefully and discovered that they, too, could manufacture it. It was supposed to take 3 years for any generic supplier to get up to speed and figure out how to be able to do this. The Taiwanese Taiwanese pharmaceutical experts figured out how to do it in 18 days. Thailand said they could get up to speed in manufacturing in 10 days, suggesting that all of Roche's claims in the previous years had been charitably untrue. And things really started to break open. So actually small interventions can turn out to really shift the terms of public debate in quite important ways. And there's huge pressure going on now throughout the world to override Roche's patent, and that's leading the company to enter into negotiations about licensing arrangements. And if they don't agree to those arrangements, I'm quite sure there's going to be a number of patent overrides, what's called compulsory licensing, around the world. And it's even starting to change the terms of debate in the United States, with Senator Schumer really putting a lot of pressure on Roche to revisit this issue and spurring them to at least say that they're open to licensing arrangements with others.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brooke Baker, who's an expert in international patent law with HealthGap, he says that Roche has offered voluntary licenses to other companies, but that it's the offer is ill-defined, delayed, and insufficient. So there at least appears to be some willingness on Roche's part.
Right. Well, the willingness is due 100% to the threat that that there would be a compulsory licenses issue, that the patent would be overridden. Until then, they said they weren't interested, and in any case, no one else could manufacture it. Once it was clear that others could figure out how to manufacture it and do so, once the threat started coming that the patent would be overridden, compulsory licenses would be issued, then they were suddenly much more open for the first time to discussing voluntary licenses. And so far, they've been dragging out these discussions with most manufacturers. If they were operating in good faith, what they would do is simply say, there's a license available to anyone who wants to manufacture this drug. The only condition is that they have to meet regulatory requirements in the country where they sell it, and we're charging a royalty of X percent, say 4%, for each pill sold. If they took that kind of approach, then a lot of others would get in the game right away, and the world would be able to ramp up production appropriately. Instead, they're engaging in kind of convoluted negotiations with a variety of firms intended to delay competition and to segment markets and preserve as much as possible their monopoly control.
All right, Weissman, we have about a minute or minute and a half left, and it occurred to me I never asked you, you're the director of Essential Action. What Essential Action is?
We're a corporate accountability group in Washington, D.C. We've focused a lot on intellectual property and patent issues over the last decade, and especially how they interfere with access to medicines. A lot of our campaigning has been on HIV/AIDS drugs, and now especially on the avian flu drugs as this saga unfolds.
And your publication, Multinational Monitor, is that something for the general public? Should we tell people to take a look at that?
It's definitely for the general public, and we would encourage everyone to look at it. Back issues are posted on the web at multinationalmonitor.org, and people can get subscription information there as well.
I want to thank you so much for being on the Peter Werbe Show. Robert Weissman, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Triple Play Thursday. Join 101 WRIF this Thursday in the historic downtown Ypsilanti Entertainment District. One cover gets you triple the experience.
Club Divine.
Dance to the high energy beats and enjoy the scenery, because Thursday night is ladies' night. Ladies 21 and over get in free. Plus, dress to impress. Your picture could be featured on the Triple Play Party Picks at WRIF.com.
Hub 13.
Enjoy dueling piano starting at 8 p.m. and join the Ripper. Name that tune to win great prizes.
Best damn sports bar.
10 pool tables, steel tip darts.
cards, 20 TVs, and this Thursday, meet Killer Kowalski. Play sports trivia for prizes, plus everyone can get registered to win tickets for Michigan, Ohio State. It's all happening this Thursday with 101 WRIF at Club Divine, Pub 13, and the Best Damn Sports Bar, located in the historic downtown Ypsilanti Entertainment District at 23 North Washington Street, or call them for more info at 734-485-4120.
Triple Thursday.
It's happening right now somewhere in Detroit.
I just pay the minimums on this credit card and this card and wait for my next check to pay this one? No, that won't work. I'm already way past due on that one. They can't cut me off after just a few missed payments.
You need to pay those bills. And American Equity Mortgage can help at AmericanEquity.com.
If I don't eat or drive for a month, but then next month's going to be worse.
At AmericanEquity.com, you can apply online right now for a debt consolidation loan that will save you hundreds of dollars every month, even with less than perfect credit.
I could sell my car or get a second job, but even that's going to take time. I need money now.
Say yes to American Equity Mortgage, and we'll say yes to you. Get loan approved in hours and close as fast as 1 week.
Oh, I gotta get some help.
Go to AmericanEquity.com now, because the future belongs to you. Apply online at AmericanEquity.com or call American Equity Mortgage toll-free at 888-229-7699.
Honey, what's wrong? Why are you so miserable?
It's starting to get cold outside.
So?
So, no more parties on the deck.
Yeah, we always end up going to John's house in the winter. It's because we have no room inside, and besides that, they have that awesome rock and roll rec room Hamilton built for them.
I know, he doesn't stop bragging about it at all the parties, and the annoying way he chants their phone number, 586-215-2810.
Baby, we should do it.
Come here, you.
No, you dog. I mean, we should call Hamilton Homes and bring the party outside inside. You keep telling me Hamilton Homes is a premier home builder specializing in working with homeowners for all of their home remodeling needs.
They do, and we'll be able to party with our friends and family here inside this winter, plus all the extra room for the kids' stuff and storage space.
Oh, did you say storage space? Call them today. Do it now.
All right, I'm dialing. 586-215-2810.
Bring the party outside, inside, with the quality, craftsmanship, design, and customer service that you deserve. Hamilton Homes, 586-215-2810.
As you venture out into this dizzying malaise of a world we call the world, I urge you to stay in touch with that innermost spark that makes life worth living, which is as good a reason as any to party at Wild Woody's. What do you say? Let's go, people!
Relive your partying glory. It's Wild Woody's College Night with the girls of the Big Ten this Wednesday night at Wild Woody's in Roseville, featuring the girls of BT. Join the Dr. Doug Podell from 101 WRIF at Wild Woody's and cheer on your favorite college. See which girls make the grade and enjoy $1 domestic bottle beers and $2 Jaeger, Cuervo, and lemon drops. Relive some college memories and totally fabricate others. It's Wild Woody's College Night with the Riff and the girls of the Big Ten this Wednesday night. Wild Woody's on Gratiot, just minutes from 696 or I-94 in Rockin' Roseville. Wild Woody's.
It's time to live the mortgage experts. 800-333-ROCK.
Say thank you to you, all of our clients out there. It's our 20-year anniversary, and we're excited. And right now, for folks that have credit card debt, you need to be careful. Credit card minimum payments are going to be doubling soon. So you want to consolidate that debt, and the mortgage experts can help you right now. If you call today, a mortgage expert can help you consolidate that credit card debt, reduce your payments now.
It's time to live.
When my son started having behavior problems, the total transformation techniques were like the instruction manual on how to deal with him. We got immediate results.
Ever wish your kid came with an instruction manual when he's disrespectful, defiant, or even abusive? Do you know how to fix it? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior right now with the Total Transformation. The program then helps you fix every behavior problem under the sun. Defiance, back-talking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. There's no screaming, no fighting, no frustration. The Total Transformation is the program I've used for over 30 years to solve even the worst behavior problems. your child will listen to you again, and you'll get peace and sanity back into your home. I guarantee it.
Call now and get How to Turn Your Child's Attitude Around in 1 minute or less free with your order. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185. Call now. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185.